on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Middle of the week, and it's here already. My apologies for my absence last night, but you know what? I got to tell you something. It looks like Tuesdays may be compromised for a while yet because, among other things, this committee appears to want to meet on Tuesday evenings. And it is fairly important, and I am... Look, how do I explain this? I'm going to be taking Tuesday nights to attend these committee meetings, at least until I see whether or not this committee has any validity to it. For one reason and one reason only. Well, actually, several reasons. But mainly because education has always been important to me. And I don't think that sitting on the side... Well, I won't sit here and say get involved. I won't sit here and say go out and do. I will not sit here and say, you know, you need to participate if I'm not willing to do it myself. And so that's what I'm doing. I was asked to participate in this thing. A certain amount of trust was involved in it, and I'm going to go do it. So that means Tuesday nights are reruns for a while. That's where I was last night, and that's where I'll be for a bunch of coming Tuesdays. It's unavoidable. At any rate, I'm here tonight. I am here tonight, and you are there. So I think we should have about 2 hours and 57 minutes of some darn fine conversation. At least I hope we do. This is The Horn, America's liberal voice. You know that. I'm Bob Kincaid. Most of you know that, unless you're new to the program. And if you are new to the program, just kind of strap in and hang on, and you'll get the hang of things sooner or later. Trust me. I promise. Now, with that in mind, it's Wednesday. And, of course, Wednesday is always the middle of the week. Wednesday is always downhill to Friday. Wednesday is always hump day. Oh, but brethren and sistren, you know, because, well... Some things just have to be. Wednesday is, yes, hallelujah, glory, somebody pass me a snake. Prayer meeting on the horn. Hallelujah, hallelujah, hallelujah. Oh, Mr. Minister of Music, brother, if you would just come up and lead us in our offertory hymn, if you please. And a gentle reminder, brethren and sister, your contributions at this point to the horn, given what fundraising has been for the month, would be like a drop of rain on a desert. It'll just... But Lord, don't we need those drops of rain? Don't we need those drops of rain? Still looking for the full contingent of the thrifty 250. 250 folks willing to contribute $10, a wee mere $10 per month, in order for this programming enterprise, this effort to survive and to continue. Because that's a portion of what it takes. A portion of what it takes. So as the hymn is sung and the plate comes around, if you would be so kind as to use your virtual collection plate, going over to headonradionetwork.com, clicking the Contribute tab, and signing up for a $10 a month contribution, subscription, whatever you care to call it, just to keep the horn going. And just as a gentle reminder for those interested in doing the math, that works out to being about, less than a nickel an hour for this entire program. A media bargain if ever there was one. So, Brother Minister of Music, if you would fire up the choir, please.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen.
Amen.
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around. And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah! Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, many a moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Whoever said religion should be free?
Oh, what's up, Ralston on the Ronald Journal on the Brawler Brawler Suet. I love you, brethren and sisters. Oh, welcome to Prayer Meeting Wednesday. Come on down. Come in out of the parking lot. You know, standing out there smoking with the heathens is sinful and all. Come on in. Come through the vestibule. Come on down. Come on down. There's plenty of room down front. I know how it is with you people. You want to sit in the back. You think I don't see you, but you just come on down that blood-red altar, brethren and sisters. You come on down and you fall on your knees in front of the altar, and I want you to reach your arms out as far as they'll go and bring them down and lay them, set them, hold them on either side of the subwoofer. The subwoofer of sensibility, and feel your connection to the server of reason on high. Oh, brethren and sisters, this is the Cathedral of Common Sense, and I am your Arch Dalai Lama Pope Bob Kincaid, and we are here for Prayer Meeting Wednesday. Yes, 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 you've had your bellies filled down in the fellowship hall, fought off the deacons, and made it all the way up here to the front. Now let's make it count for something, brethren and sisters. Amen and amen. Hallelujah. Yes, indeedy. It's Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the horn, and you know what? The first word in Prayer Meeting Wednesday is prayer, and I need to advise you, I need to remind you of how important prayer is in your life. Yes, I do, because you know what? Failing to pray can be bad for your health. Oh, yes, it can, brethren and sisters, yes, it can. It not just here in the good old new United States of America. No, sir, no, sir, no, sir. It can be bad for your health in Canada, too. Now, it don't matter what religion you are. Not praying can be bad for your health. Forgetting to pray can get you dead. Yes, it can. Just like it did with a little old 13-year-old girl in Canada. Her daddy's 71-year-old Musa Sidime was outraged by his daughter's refusal to pray. And that's why he beat her about the head and shoulders. That's why he hit her as hard as he did in the head, trying to get her to understand the need to commune with her almighty Creator. And you know what? He sent her straightway to her Creator. Yes, he did. Nutina Sidime died on Saturday evening in Longueuil, Quebec, 3 days after her daddy knocked her unconscious for not praying and made her bleed from her nose and sent her to the hospital. Now, he did the right thing, Daddy did. He called 911 after he knocked her senseless for not praying. See, poor little Nutin Sedime wanted to be part of the reason-based community. And she didn't see any reason to be running around and praying at things that you can't see, can't touch, can't feel, can't prove exist. Daddy didn't like it. He was infuriated. Karine Girard said he was mean. I've seen him grab her by the arm because she wouldn't go up and say her prayers. The relatives, of course, say her death was an accident. But we all know that was God Almighty in the hand of her daddy. Because she wasn't a praying to his invisibleness. Her fellow students at her high school are, of course, devastated. Remembering her, they released balloons. And they recalled how she was voted coolest student in her class, 13 years old. She has a Facebook page now. She doesn't have a life, but she has a Facebook page dedicated to her memory. She had a gorgeous smile, and religion killed her. The insanity that religion infects its followers with killed her. Ended her 13-year-old life. Now, I'm sure some of the Christians would like to say, well, maybe that she was a Muslim. But you know what? The Muslims get to say, hey, look at all those poor little boys the Catholic priests buggered. And all the little girls that the dirty, greasy-headed the Protestant preachers like to grope and fondle back behind the altar. There is not a religion on this planet that is not touched by the scourge of violence and hatred, that is not infected with filth. Because, well, it's religion. Yeah. It's religion. And you're welcome to it. But there's a couple of other religious stories, or stories that deserve our attention out there, as well as a number of other things that we will get to later in the program. Not the least of which is the story that it continues to sort of burble along. I'm looking at a post from 3 days ago over at the Smirking Chimp, cross-posted from Truth Out. Just love Truth Out, don't you? Truthout.org. William Rivers Pitt is a fine liberal writer. And over at Truth Out, he wrote, thank God for Fred Phelps. Because, you see, oral arguments were had recently in the case of Fred Phelps and the Westboro Baptist Church suing the man that they say imposed upon their civil rights. Mm-hmm. And, of course, William Rivers Pitt lays out the whole disgusting story. Fred Phelps and his demented clan in Kansas constitute the Westboro Baptist Church. And he was, you know, ordained. Remember, this is worth remembering. Fred Phelps was ordained by the Baptist Church, and Fred Phelps's ordination remains to this day. He has never been defrocked, desmocked, nothing. He is a Baptist minister in good standing. Yeah. As you know, the Westboro Baptist Church despises people who happen to be gay and those who don't hate them well enough. And so they picket funerals and they torment dead people's families. They torment the grieving in the name of Christ Jesus. Amen. Fred's daughter, Margie, you know, Fred's a lawyer, too, but he's getting a little long in the fang, so he sent Margie to argue the case in front of the Supreme Court. Her argument, nation, hear this little church. If you want them to stop dying, stop sinning. It didn't sit well with most of the justices. Let's see, Ruth Bader Ginsburg. This is a case about exploiting a private family's grief. That's what she said. Justice Elena Kagan asked whether a person might be, whether a wounded soldier might be able to sue somebody who demonstrates, quote, outside the person's home, the person's workplace, outside the person's church, saying these kinds of things, you're a war criminal, whatever these signs say or worse, she asked. Samuel Alito, Jesus. Samuel Alito queried whether the Constitution would shield somebody who delivers a mean-spirited account of a soldier's death to the serviceman's grandmother while leaving her grandson's grave. Yeah, she's waiting to take her bus back home, he hypotheticalized. Let me describe it for you, and I'm so happy that this happened. I only wish I were there. I only wish that I could have taken pictures of it, and on and on and on like that. Now, is that protected by the First Amendment? As William Rivers Pitt notes, Fred Phelps is a toilet bug. Refers to him as being the highest exemplar of the American Taliban phenomenon. But then William Rivers Pitt says something else. But he and his people have the right to speak out as they have, and though it twists the gut, it must be allowed to continue unmolested by legal interference. Counter-demonstrators are equally free to confront Phelps and his actions and address. And what he's arguing is the old Judge Learned Hand theory that the remedy to bad speech is not to quell that speech. The remedy to bad speech is more speech. I disagree. Because, again, as we have discussed, and we discussed it some in regard, once again, you know, it's always these noisy Christians who say that they're so oppressed in a country that they practically own. These people, the freak who wanted to burn Qurans. Well, what they're doing is insightful. Not insightful, but insightful, inciteful, conduct. They are trying to get a rise out of people. In other words, they are deliberately being provocative. They are trying to get someone to violate the law. Witness the very nature of the case that is before the Supreme Court, upon which arguments were had. It's a damages case. It's a civil case. It is a civil rights case in which Fred Phelps, Margie Phelps, and the Westboro Baptist Church claim that their civil rights were violated by the grieving father of a dead serviceman. And they engaged in hate-filled, incitement-driven conduct in order to try to leech money out of the man. You might recall the story, you know, even a blind hog finds an acorn now and then, but Bill O'Reilly vowed to make sure that the man had enough money to pay the judgment, if I recall correctly, and, you know, credit where credit is due if he actually comes through. I don't know the answer. But what we have here is a case of even the Supreme Court of the United States getting it wrong. Because apparently, as long as one is not I don't know, eating hallucinogens or smoking anything, you can be as hateful as you want in your church. And you can say anything you want in the public sphere, up to and including burning some other guy's holy book, up to and including tormenting and torturing grieving families. And I have a sneaking suspicion that the Supreme Court of the United States is going to say, fine, cool by us. Because, once again, it must be borne in mind that the religion industry uses the First Amendment both as a shield and a cudgel. And it is sickening. It is absolutely sickening. And again, it appears they're going to be allowed to do so. When they shouldn't. When there is no threat to the First Amendment whatsoever in not protecting speech that is designed to create a violent reaction. I realize there's some slippery slope stuff there, but it is worth discussing and it's worth thinking about. And you're free to disagree. I'm probably the most jealous defender of the First Amendment that you will ever, ever meet. But incitement to violence is not a free speech issue. It is a peaceful civil society issue. Do you see the distinction? I hope so. I hope so. Because if we, for as long as the Westboro Baptist churches of the world are tolerated, they will continue to up the ante in hopes of, again, leeching more money out of the system. And eventually it will lead to violence and someone will get hurt, because you know what? I don't think that people are going to tolerate that forever. Because somewhere along the way they're going to protest where some wound is too open, some hurt is too raw. And the response will be sad and regrettable. Interesting, I think, to sort of contrast what I expect to be the ruling from the Supreme Court about the Westboro Baptist Church against another case. And it appears to have been a 6-2 decision on whether or not to hear a case. The story I'm looking at is dated yesterday. It comes from the Christian Science Monitor and reads as follows. The U.S. Supreme Court on Tuesday decided to hear the appeal of The U.S. Supreme Court on Tuesday declined to hear the appeal of two Colorado residents who were excluded from a speech by President Bush in 2005 because White House aides saw them arrive in a car with a bumper sticker that proclaimed, "No more blood for oil." Now remember, that was the sticker on the car. For all anyone knew, they were rock-ribbed Republicans who had just gotten a ride in the wrong car. They had done everything correctly. They had obtained tickets to the event, which, if you recall, the dark days of the Bush administration meant name, address, phone number, social security number, driver's license, library card, thumbprints from each hand. You remember? Because free speech was something that was not looked favorably upon during the Bush administration. So they jumped through all the hoops. They got through security. Didn't have anything dangerous. There were no threat in any way whatsoever. They manifested no intent of disrupting the event. And they were thrown out. Now, the meeting was held in a museum in Denver. Technically private property, but everyone there was an invitee for purposes of the political event. Leslie Weiss and Alex Young never said a blessed thing. They didn't disrupt, yet they were ejected before the speech began. Again, based on a sign on an automobile parked far, far away from the event. And they sued. They sued on First Amendment grounds, saying that their First Amendment rights had been violated. And every judge that looked at it threw it out. Until it got to the Supreme Court of the United States on a petition for certiorari. At which point the Supreme Court of the United States also said, nah, sorry, you don't have any First Amendment rights. No, sorry, nothing was violated here. Never mind the fact that you were thrown out of the meeting, out of the gathering, out of the assembly of people, based upon speculation about what your politics might or might not be. Never mind that you were properly ticketed. Never mind that you had done everything. Never mind. You damned liberal, you don't have any First Amendment rights. The plaintiffs were embarrassed. The plaintiffs were humiliated. But they were not embarrassed or, and this is really the important line being drawn here, they were not humiliated or embarrassed in the name of Jesus. They were merely embarrassed and humiliated upon suspicion of having the wrong politics. Not even proof. Just suspicion. And so the Supreme Court said no. Except for Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Sonia Sotomayor, who said they would have heard the case. Not ruled on it positively, just heard it. See, this is what's important. We're not talking about win or lose. We're talking about the willingness of the court to even hear the case. Of two people who were clearly guilty of LWL, living while liberal. Justice Ginsburg wrote, I cannot see how reasonable public officials or any staff or volunteers under their direction could have viewed the bumper sticker as a permissible reason for depriving, interesting word that, depriving, Weiss and Young of access to the event. Well, Justice Ginsburg, that's mainly because there is no reasonable excuse. But being reasonable and level-headed herself, Justice Ginsburg did acknowledge that there is immunity for volunteers. It's called the Federal Volunteer Protection Act. And she noted that it might have protected the volunteers who said, go get a Secret Service agent. We got a couple of damn liberals in here. I seen what they done drove up in a vehicle with a sticker says no more blood for oil. And we know that all good God-fearing Jesus-loving Americans want lots of blood for oil. What's the difference? Had these two individuals, had they been part of the No Blood for Oil Baptist Church, would the case have been heard? Because the Westboro Baptist Church case got heard. It was admitted. The arguments were taken the other day, as I noted. They got heard. Because they were the Westboro Baptist Church, and they love Jesus so much that it makes them hate the faggots. Because that's the signs they carry. Fags must die. God hates fags. Thank God for dead soldiers. Shall we understand, then, that political speech in this country in 2010 in the United States of America, political speech is less protected than religious speech? Why, yes. Yes, we shall. Because the truth of the matter is, as I have noted on this program 100 times, if I've noted it once, that the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States has been reduced to nothing more than a life support system for the religion industry. Can you imagine that piece of walking excrement, Margie Phelps, fouling the Supreme Court of the United States? With her hateful, insanity-driven arguments, whereas two peaceful, law-abiding, ordinary citizens have no such standing. The Supreme Court rejected the case, even though there is a 1996 Sixth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals case about staffers for Bill Clinton, staffers for George H.W. Bush, you know, Poppy Bush. They refused admission to an event of an individual who was wearing a Bill Clinton button. The campaign had a policy barring rally participants from carrying signs or wearing buttons. Well, carrying signs or wearing buttons, critical of George H.W. Bush. Once she gave up her Bill Clinton button, the woman was allowed to attend the event. Now, this latest ruling, you want to hear the law turned on its ear? The 10th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals majority said that the event in Denver with the Bush speech was similar to the one where the woman had to take off her Bill Clinton button, because the President of the United States, oh, sit down and strap in, brethren and sistren, the President of the United States has a First Amendment right to control the message at his speech. The common groundlings, however, do not enjoy even so much as a First Amendment right to stand quietly, peaceably assembled. Lawyers for Weiss and Young said, when the government decides to hold an event paid for by taxpayers and open to the public, and when the government itself makes all the decisions about the event, First Amendment rights do not turn on whether the event occurred at a municipal auditorium or a private museum. And I agree. Welcome. Welcome to Jesus Land. No kidding. Welcome to Jesus Land. Where a religiously insane person is afforded rights that the normal simply may not have. Yeah, I think this tune's called for. This is The Horn. I'm Bob.
Alabama Jesus, don't come from Galilee. Alabama Jesus, he looks like General Lee. He ain't got a hook nose, he damn sure ain't Hebrew. If you ain't from around here, honey, he won't do dick for you. Alabama Jesus likes his niggers on the run. Alabama Jesus run off those Indians. Yes, them folks cleared the land, all part of Jesus' plan. Get that money in the hand of the Alabama clan. Well, he said, keep all you have and screw the poor. Take that money that you're making and make it make some more. There'll be a church on every corner till the number is obscene. I love those Bama biddies. They're so pious and so mean. Alabama Jesus, it's about your pedigree. Alabama Jesus, sure looks that way to me. The proud begat the ignorant, and they've all they're proud to be. They dig for brains, they love their Lord, and they love their family tree. Alabama Jesus, well, he prays at the ball game. Alabama Jesus was taking me into shame. He don't mind to evolution, high IQs or humanists. He likes them big and beefy, don't hide and question less. Well, if your preacher is too liberal, talking about that humankind, just drag him out the pulpit, toss him out on his behind. Don't back those local charities like the cursed liberals do. Just judge and moralize and serve your time down in the pew. Keep those tithes are coming upwards over 10%. When you make good money, that's a lot of Bible sense. Serving in the third world, you'll never see or know. Now the parasites cross town, sleeping on Skid Row. And those people in third world kitties, when they get hungry, they can pray to Alabama Jesus, 10,000 miles away. Away, away, away. White folks thank their Jesus for white supremacy. The black folks ask their Jesus to make them bourgeoisie. But Jesus knows the danger of a real democracy. So he privatized the education, which serves to bring back segregation. Now his Ten Commandments in a courtroom, and we're schooled about creation. In 4004 B.C., the first white man ate some fruit from the tree. And then he moved to Northern Europe to denounce the papacy. Although he likes the Pope's ideas concerning pregnancy. Come to Alabama. Come to Alabama. It ain't the heat, it's the stupidity. It's the stupidity. It's the stupidity. It's the stupidity.
It's the stupidity. It is the stupidity. I was also, welcome back, because you didn't go anywhere, neither did I. Just sat here and listened, sort of transfixed. I was put in mind of that also because there's an excellent post from the always excellent Matt Osborne up over at Crooks and Liars today. You may have to scroll down a little ways to get it, but entitled, We Can All Live in Alabama. This is a strong, strong argument for not giving up in this election season and getting one's rear end out and voting. And well worth the time. And as usual, one of the things I love about Matt's posts is that he actually participates in the dialogue once it begins on the post itself with people who care to comment. And that's one of the things that makes Matt so enjoyable to read, because the thing grows in the telling, as it were. But the point of it all, as Matt notes, and go read it for yourself, the Republican Party has a proposal for you. With your hope and change frustrated by their obstruction, they would like you to blame the president, stay depressed instead of volunteering, and forget to vote on November 2nd. In return, they'll make the entire country into Alabama. Another thing I love about Matt is that he has that sort of weird tangential ability to make cross references to obscure films, because he said, remember the scene in Demolition Man where Sylvester Stallone finds out that in the future all restaurants are Taco Bells? It'll be just like that, and Exhibit A is California. Really, I'm not kidding. If you want to see what America will look like should Tea Party Republicans take Congress, come pay the Heart of Dixie a visit. My only disagreement with Matt Osborne in that regard is that I don't think it's all going to be Taco Bell like in Demolition Man. It's all going to be Carl's Jr. like in Idiocracy. And I think you know why. Go have a read. It's well worth your time. There's so much to go into this evening, but let's go straightway to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Hey, Sandra.
Just a quick sort of pop culture question, because I'm kind of disturbed. Listen, what is this group, Lady Antebellum?
Oh, aren't they awful?
Well, no, it's just incredible. It's like, hello, what's up with the name? And apparently they just decided because they were on some tour of, like, the great old mansions. And I'm like, the name, dude? Antebellum? Are you kidding? I don't know. It just is sort of, are they that insipid and that stupid where they don't make the historical connections? I don't call anything Antebellum. I'm sorry.
How about Lady Up to the Big House?
Well, it's just like, what? Or Lady Yesabasa. I mean, come on. I had to hear the music, and it's really insipid, horrible kind of, I don't know what kind of country that is. Ew.
That is Focus Grouped, America's Great Hit Number One Country, coming right back. Yeah, that's
okay.
Right.
Oh, God, because it was awful. I mean, one of the lyrics that stuck in my, burned my head was, oh, I'm a little drunk, it's 1 a.m., and I need you now. And I'm like, ah!
You know, country music's fallen a long way from Don't Come Home A-Drinking With Lovin' On Your Mind to It's 1 a.m., I'm drunk, and I need you now.
Listen, anyway, but I just was more disturbed by the, you know, the name. I just thinking, wow, you know, that's definitely lost in translation, you know?
But you know what, I suspect that they'd probably, because, you know, those are two of those complicated Latin words, and we know how much Latin is taught in this country anymore, Sandra.
Well, I understand, but, I mean, it's not a really mega difficult one. It just means, you know, before war, but anyone who lives in this country, I would think they would would make connection with Antebellum and, you know, Gone with the Wind even.
Well, right, and but the thing is, the folks that are listening to Lady Antebellum look back at that as the good old days.
Okay, well, listen, anyway, so, yeah, it was problematic for me because I'm thinking, damn, white folks. And, of course, I'm popping up with the black lady from Being There because that's always my go-to.
Oh, you're awful.
Well, I have to deal with these dumbass whitey. You know, I'm like, damn. Because that lady, you know.
You ain't got no sense, have you?
my head exploded when I first saw that. I thought, oh, shit. So, yeah.
I have a message for you from Raphael.
Right. And then she saw his ass on Nationwide TV, and she's saying, damn, it's a white man, you know, only in America.
You know, one of these days, Sandra, we're gonna, you know, when we have the big horn in, somewhere in the middle of the country, or at a beach somewhere maybe, and we all get together and have barbecue and all kinds of fun stuff, we're gonna have the Horn Film Festival. And it's gonna be Idiocracy and Doctor Strangelove and Being There, and you know what, maybe we need to put together the list now.
Yeah, no, because, I mean, Being There is, like, that's one of my all-time favorites. The whole movie is just, it's this one hilarious scene after another from the lawyer who's saying, damn it, now I got to be a lawyer the rest of my life? Come on now. Classic. Fantastic lines, one after another, okay? I love that movie.
No, so do I, so very much. And
so good. And, yeah, anyway, so, that, yeah, but that name, I just was sort of shocked. I'm like, really? There's really a country group using Antebellum in their name?
Well, if there's any comfort to be taught or to be taken, Sandra, they think that that's someone's father's sister, Antebellum.
Okay, because they gave some really insipid comment about, oh, we just, you know, after we toured some of the old, you know, slave houses from the past. I mean, they didn't put it that way, but that's how I'm putting it. And it's like, okay. Anyway, I know it's really minor, but you know how these things are.
No, you know what? There's no such thing as minor. At least not where this, but because it's all part of the puzzle. I just
wish people knew what they, you know, if they knew what the hell it meant and then they went ahead, that would be one thing. But when they just don't even know what the hell they're doing. You know, it's like wearing the Japanese T-shirts. And you don't even know what the hell they say. That kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's I'm a moron in Japanese script.
Right,
yeah.
You're just sporting it like you cool, and it says something really lame. Anyway, or the chamber.
It's like brought to you by Carl's Jr. maybe or something. Yeah, right.
You know, anyway, but so yeah, that was like that was my pop thing for the minute. And I was wondering, did you look at that Hitler thing I sent you?
Oh yeah.
There's a whole series. I couldn't believe they mocked one up with the housing, the first part of the housing, and then the fact that they mocked another one up for this one. I don't know. I just thought.
Yeah, Hitler. I love all of those. Hitler finds out Michael Jackson's dead.
Right. I mean, I know it's really juvenile. What can I say? You know, but I don't know. They just sort of make me laugh. And unfortunately, when I first watched it, I was watching with a professor friend of mine. We were just in the office kind of howling, and this real earnest lefty rolled up and just looked at us, thought we were just so right off. And I've never been able to recover from that.
Well, there was another Hitler one that popped up a couple of days ago. Hitler finds out a Republican is running around in an SS uniform.
Oh, shit. No, I didn't see that one. Oh, so they... Well, anyway.
And he's so excited. He's so excited because we were this close. We were coming back, and this guy blows it up.
I mean, I don't know. I know it's really silly, and things aren't that funny, but that one just sort of, I just thought, wow.
Well, you know, I wanted to run it on the air, but it's all subtitles, so.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can't even do, you know, because it doesn't work for all.
It's all Hitler screaming, Haben Sie gehabt, hatten gewollten sein. You know, it just don't work.
No, but it's the whole premise is hilarious because people have to see it to appreciate it. Yeah. Hey, so, God, I lost my train of thought. What was going on? Did some some decision come down with that church or something? Or they,
no, they had the oral arguments,
Okay, right.
But you just got this really, really sick feeling from the questions that were being asked that this is going to come out being sure, you know, they're a religious organization, they can do anything they want to.
Well, what would you expect? I mean, they're allowing, you know, bot speech to be viewed as okay, so. Why wouldn't they do that one? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's, Religious Lunatics United.
Yeah, but the point you were making was it wouldn't apply to if it was a left situation, right?
Well, apparently it didn't. These guys couldn't even get in the door.
Right.
I mean, this case is this. They weren't arguing for whether or not they should get in. They were arguing the merits of the case in this instance, in the Westboro case.
I mean, anytime this court takes up a case now, you know, I'm always just sort of in dread. You know what I mean? You know how maybe back in the day a court case would come up, you would say, oh, good, somehow it's going to be resolved to some sort of reasonable outcome. Now, I just dread that branch of government. You know what I mean? As much as I do any of the other ones at this point.
Well, the thing that threw me about this is I read this and you know, again, the justices were all asking questions that were designed to indicate how much sympathy they felt for the grieving father, which I think you'd pretty much have to be dead not to. Well, you know, dead or a fundamentalist. And, well, it's kind of the same thing, at least from the neck up. But I couldn't help remembering the comments back during the great debate over the non-controversy over the non-mosque, when Rabbi Foxman of the ADL said, "You just have to tolerate some people's prejudices."
Well, yeah, no, that is like, you know, that's just classic. That line, you really have to file that one away. Yeah.
You know, so and he's coming and he's saying that, and that just to remind people, that was within the context of saying, well, you know, Holocaust victims are touchy about seeing swastikas, and therefore it's the same thing as right wingers being touchy about seeing mosques, or black folks seeing burning crosses, and we just have to tolerate some people's prejudices, but apparently. We don't have to tolerate this soldier's father's grief.
No, but the thing about the whole Christian, these people want a pass to be hateful and bigoted towards gays. I mean, this is the thing that kills me, is that they're invoking their right to practice their religion as grounds to
incite other people to violence.
Right. It's just like, and they're stamping their feet and they're crying about it. It's just incredible to watch. And you know,
well, remember, Sandra, Westboro Baptist Church got its start when they got a lot of attention by going up to Wyoming and protesting the funeral of Matthew Shepard, the anniversary of whose crucifixion just recently passed.
Right. I keep waiting for somebody... They're going to pick the wrong funeral and somebody going to blow their asses away. I'm sorry. That's what I keep waiting for.
Well, there's that, or there's the other end of it, which is what Westboro Baptist wants. Because, again, this is incitement. This is a desire to ramp up further activity. What they're waiting for is for them to inspire someone to go and blow away a gay bar. Or go and shoot up a pride parade.
Well, the thing is, though, I mean, I'm sorry, in lieu of what's been going on the last couple of weeks, I'm holding my breath because the hatred that's just coming out, not to mention that thing in New York, that man who's running for governor, it's like, are you kidding?
And, you know, the Carl Paladino?
Paladino, yes. I mean, that has to be, I just think it's going to be Governor Cuomo is all I can say about that.
Well, it's all you can hope.
Well, I don't, you know, he's just beyond the pale. And what's really disgusting is, oh, by the way, you know, he had no problems taking money from the various gay clubs that he owned the property in.
But,
you know what I mean?
Right.
It was so disgusting, the hypocrisy.
But what I find fascinating out of that is, and this is an issue that was raised by Texas Betsy, our blogger, who is also the Horn's Jewish mother. Everybody needs one. And that is the fact that, A, this speech was delivered in a Hasidic synagogue, and no women were allowed to attend.
But didn't he just read a piece of paper that was handed to him by some misogynist?
And the text was that's the whole thing. The text of the speech was pre-distributed.
Right.
And when he didn't say one of the lines, but you know how the AP and the other wire services are, they report in advance based upon the printed comments.
Yeah.
And say so-and-so said so-and-so so that they can deadline the wire and have it go out the minute it's done. Well, they used a quote from the pre-printed release that he later struck out and then demanded an apology from media for having printed it and turned around and blamed the synagogue and said, well, I was just saying what they wanted me to say.
Well, that in itself, you should check yourself. That's what I was, like, disturbed on. I'm thinking, wow, okay. And first, and another thing is, like, I saw those photos of him walking with those misogynists, and I just thought, oh, my God, how repressive and horrible that life must be for the women in those people's lives. You know, I'm sorry. That's all I thought about. I thought, Jesus, that must be horrible. And I know it's like, you know, maybe insulting someone's religion, but it tied it in with that, with the poor Arabs in Israel who now have to, what, swear an oath? How's that working out? What in the world?
Oh, the loyalty oath?
Well, that is just, I mean, this is like straight up apartheid. It's like they are apartheid out. They've lost their minds in Israel. I'm like, hello? Next thing they'll be issuing different color passports and shit like that.
You know what? You know what's really handy? and I think it might work really well for the Israeli government if they get all of their Muslims to wear a little appliqued crescent on their clothing.
Well, they might as well just go all out because, I mean, that's the way that country is going. I mean, every time I see that foreign minister with his hatred, he's such a hateful,
Well, it's interesting you would bring that up, though, Sandra, because I was wandering around. You know, I didn't get to do a show last night, so. But I saw this headline over at BBC, and I thought, wait a minute, maybe we're taking a step forward. Israel debates child violence after Palestinians hurt. Now, that sounds hopeful, doesn't it, Sandra?
What's the but?
Yeah, well, you know me too well, don't you? It turns out, the story says, an Israeli parliamentary committee has been debating the issue of the involvement of children in violent activities after two young Palestinian boys were run over and injured by an Israeli right-wing activist. So this right-wing Israeli gets a rock thrown at his car, and he takes off headlong and runs down a pair of Palestinian children. But the Israeli government's impaneled a commission to discuss why are those Palestinians so mean to us.
I don't mean to laugh because that's just a horrific story you just told me, but it is just like, I know Desmond Tutu is retiring from public life, but can he jet on over to Tel Aviv for a bit, try to sort that shit out before he leaves this world? Because, I'm sorry, did the clerk show up there? Have we had a wholesale transfer of those people in South Africa? Are they in it? You know what I mean? Because I know people don't know their history, but I remember in the 80s what was going on in South Africa. The clerk, Botha, all them folks.
Oh, I remember Robin Williams in a great comedy moment, just ad-libbing. He saw, I guess there was a telephone or something on stage or off stage, and it happened to be white, and he just ran over and grabbed it and put it up to his ear and said, P.W. Botha, white courtesy phone, P.W. Botha, white courtesy phone.
Excellent, exactly. And I don't care. I don't care if I'm, like, conflating, but as far as I'm concerned, that's where they're going. You don't have no damn loyalty oath in a country. I'm sorry, that is so fascist.
Yes, it is.
I mean, you know, it's just, and it's almost over the top, you know. That's the thing. I read that, and I thought, oh, wow, they are really sort of going all out.
Well, you know, the first thing it put me in mind of was, of course, Catch-22. And, you know, what a magnificent book that was, is. And there's a segment in Catch-22 where the sort of obviously kind of fascist-y military leadership of the air base at Pianosa goes completely out of his mind and starts insisting that everybody sign loyalty oaths. So you get to this point where they have to sign a loyalty oath at muster in the morning. Then when they go to the mess hall for chow, they have to sign a loyalty oath to get in the door. They have to sign a loyalty oath to get their silverware. They have to sign a loyalty oath to, you know, get their eggs, their loyalty oath for their bacon, a loyalty. And it's just this sublime farce. But it's the truth. And really, it's one of the, okay, so they got to sign a loyalty oath. And then when's the next loyalty oath going to be necessary?
Well, I mean, no, it's just...
Loyalty oath to get food, maybe? That would work.
Well, it's so bankrupt. It's incredible. But anyway, I just... That story, you know, sort of did my head in. Also, the Salazar talking about, well, the Gulf is open for business. I'm like, hello? Are you kidding me? The Gulf is open for business. That is what that motherfucker said.
And but what's even funnier is the response of Mary Landrieu.
Yeah, that dumb. Yeah, well.
You stopped yourself, didn't you? That dumb. Yeah, she said. She's still not going to release her hold on Obama's nominee for the Office of Management and Budget.
Well, no, she can hold on to that. That fool is another one of those deregulations. Forever. So, no, she stay holding him. I don't even care about that.
But the reason that, well, I won't release that until we're actually permitting deep water and shallow water drilling again.
Right. So the trade-off will be less, the regulations may stay in put, but we're back to full tilt pollution. I mean, you know.
Yeah, well, she's not going to release her hold until there's another... Horizon rig spewing poison into the Gulf. Right. That's the upshot of Mary Landrieu.
Yeah, no, exactly. But the thing is, though, you know, the Obama administration, listen, these people don't know if they're coming or going. It's like, hello, you just got handed to you the don't ask, don't tell. We're holding our breath. What you going to do? Shall we put in some bets on this shit? Are they going to go with the Justice Department?
No. Do you have your little emesis basin handy, Sandra? Because I have your answer.
Please.
Nancy Pelosi this afternoon had a conference call with progressive bloggers. I didn't get the notice.
I didn't get that.
Yeah, I wasn't on the list. But she said, I hope, I haven't really heard officially that the administration's going to appeal this, but in any event, I hope they don't. I myself have always wanted a moratorium on any discharges. Okay, sure, let's take Nancy Pelosi at her word.
But she said hope, though.
Yeah.
Hope is a question mark.
Right. Well, here's the update. CNN is currently reporting that the Obama administration Department of Justice is expected to appeal the court's don't ask, don't tell decision as soon as Wednesday.
Okay, listen, because Bob Gates came out saying, you know what? President, not sure you're going to appeal. And as soon as I heard him say he was upset about it, I'm thinking, okay, well, they'll be appealing that. So that's why I was just wondering, because when Bob Gates speaks,
oh, I know.
That's usually your final word. Okay, so, yeah, I don't, you know what, yuck. And also another thing that's killing me is, hey, you know, you got another thing handed to you on a platter with this foreclosure, yet these dumbasses coming on out saying, well, we don't want to stop all of them. Some of them might be okay. Which ones are okay, Bob?
Sorry. Can't help.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's like, what in the world is wrong with this administration? Because, you know, we let the magic of the marketplace work, and oopsie, the bank's about to get fucked, so they stop it themselves. We had to let it cascade to this madness where people are locking themselves in the bathroom. And they still won't side with the people here.
Kind of, it really does make your eyes roll back in your head, doesn't it?
Well, J.P. Morgan just pulled out of MERS, the electronic recording of documents that they all were saying is okay. It's not okay. So J.P. Morgan pulled out. Listen, the shit's about to hit the fan. And the banks stand to be really hurt. So they're already talking about what's going to destabilize the economy. They're gearing us up for another handout.
Well, the other story about the foreclosure business that just made my head spin like a bad horror movie.
Like Linda Blair, much?
Right, yeah, there, you know, with the pea soup and everything.
That's another movie on our list, sorry.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
I love that, and Rosemary's Baby.
Oh, gotta have Rosemary. The list is growing, and everyone's welcome to chime in.
Oh, my God. Rosemary's Baby. Sorry to digress. That's another one. That's like one of my favorites. God, that's a crazy movie.
There's a story that I saw earlier today that just drove me a little bit nuts. Not a whole lot, just a little bit. And it comes from depositions that were taken, by a lawyer in Florida. Over this whole sort of blue smoke and mirrors foreclosure process. And it says that the banks hired as foreclosure agents Walmart workers.
Oh, shit, no! They didn't even know what compliant meant! I was laughing because, of course, I thought of you because you have this sort of aversion to stupidity. And so I thought, damn, Bob, when they started talking about the words that these folks didn't know. And, you know, I'm terrible, too, because I was like, damn it, what the hell? Yeah, that's a...
And you know, this isn't some story from, you know, Liberal Daily. This is from the Associated Press.
Oh, yeah, no, everything that I'm talking about is Reuters or Washington Post, blah, blah, blah. No, we way past the blogs now. I mean, all this shit. Because, see, what's funny, wasn't we talking about this? I swear to God, I was talking to you about this shit a year ago with that Mark to Magic.
We were. Yeah, we were. That's the fun thing. We were.
You know, and it's just like,
this is all old news to anybody who listens to the Horn.
No, somebody came up to me the other day. A friend said, well, Sandra, weren't you talking about these titles a year ago? And I was like, yes. I'm glad you were listening. They're looking at me all funny. Don't look. I ain't got no ends. I'm poor. You know how they're looking at me funny. Like, well, what the hell?
Right. No, they're looking at you because they think, because suddenly they think you're magic.
Anyway, I'm thinking, I don't got a star tip for your ass. Back off.
it's Seabiscuit in the fourth at Santa Anita. Get out of here.
Oh, God. Anyway, though, but no, though, it's just killing me because if you pay attention to this stuff, no, it's not that I'm saying that, oh, I knew it all, but it's not surprising because of how they package the mortgages and these tranches when there's no chain of signatures, right? And all of a sudden people are like, I'm sending this money to this trust and there's no real deed. You know, give me my money back. I mean, I can't wait to see how it all plays out because the investors are starting to stir. That's why it's in the news, because the rich people are starting to get...
Well, everybody's talking about, you know, what's going to happen in the lame duck session. We've already seen an intimation of what's going to happen in the lame duck session. You know, with that notary bill. The lame duck session is going to take care of the banks.
The lame duck is what we need to be real scared of on so many levels. The cat food commission. I mean, listen, the U.S. could end as we know it behind this one lame duck Congress. I swear. Anyway, yeah.
This whole thing just... It blows my mind because, you know, everybody is talking about, well, you know, the lame duck session, they might extend the Bush tax cuts for the rich. Never mind. It's what happens when they, and they've got precedent. And I referred to this a few nights ago. I remember when people were getting sick off of immunizations.
And then they did a liability thing, exactly.
Right. So, all you know, it's a simple bill. Thou shalt not sue thy negligent foreclosure holder.
Well, I just think that the thing is, it's a little bit more involved. This is why it's so serious, because of the sanctity of the contract. Now, I know the banks can get away with a lot, but see, they're going to start messing with their bread and butter. That's why this is quite serious. Because Obama, even if he had to sign that law, there's things in motion that's not going to stop. Because unless you rewrite what a contract is now, I don't see how they're going to rectify this. Because if there's not a title, you can't force people to pay into the ether.
Right. I mean, everything. That's the thing. Everything is predicated upon good title.
Right, and it's supposed to be a chain, but the thing is, it's really disgusting because it's like, well, you fools, when you were bundling up these things, you knew what was coming down. You see what I'm saying? It's just straight up fraud, and I'm waiting for the orange jumpers, 30-year sentences. You know, it's time. It really is time now. It's like, you're going to do fraud on this end and the back end?
I know. But what scares me is that this has the potential to be a nationwide courthouse burning. You know, we talked about that the other night, about how burnt down courthouses are what the businesses used to use in the 19th century to say you can't prove you own your land. And now they've muddied up the titles of so many homes that they could be forever sorting this stuff out.
Well, no, that's the thing. I mean, and this goes way back, a couple of years now. I mean, you may have bought something in a short sale environment, and you don't own that shit. It ain't yours.
And you know, the banks in the foreclosure sales, when they come around and they cry the sale on the courthouse steps, most people don't understand that the deeds the banks are giving are quitclaim deeds. And that's one of those novel little legal terms that at least in this era everybody should acquaint themselves with. A quitclaim deed is not a deed conveying title in fee simple to the new owner. A quitclaim deed just says, well, the bank relinquishes any claim that it may have on the property. Good luck. You don't have title.
I mean, it's sort of the implications. I mean, it's just incredible, you know, with the whole sanctity of property rights. I mean, we can go on and on about how this is so effed up in so many different ways. But see, my fear is we have to rely on this administration, which don't even know what the hell they're doing, you see. They put some solar panels up. Ooh, yippee, yep. But
well, that's only because they got embarrassed because America realized that after what Bill McKibben did, that the White House clearly had the Carter cooties.
Well, that's the thing. I'm just making fun of that because it's like they can't even do that right. And, you know, this housing stuff, though, is, I don't know, it's earth-shaking, I have to say. I don't really know how it's going to play out. And all these people don't either. But if they think that they're just going to sort of hand over more debt to the banks, I don't really know how that's going to work. I have no idea.
You know, it's going to be interesting to watch it, but it's going to be interesting to watch it shake out, sort of the way it's interesting to watch a cheetah chase down a gazelle.
Right, or
because you can't help watching the gazelle going and going, oh, poor bastard.
Right. Oh, my favorite. I don't know if you've ever seen this. Is like this wildebeest, ba-da-da-da, and this alligator jumped out of the river and snatched him in. Have you seen that footage?
No.
That one's crazy. Anyway, listen, what was something else? I think it was more something really shallow. Oh, Brett Favre. Whoopsie. He almost pulled it out, too, but, oh, I didn't mean to say that. I meant to get it.
See?
Oh, God. Okay, he almost won the game, but not quite.
Not quite.
Yeah.
He pulled it out.
It really was an accident. Oh, my God.
Oh, Dr. Freud, courtesy phone. Dr. Freud, courtesy phone.
Exactly. Well, listen, it was something else I wanted to ask you that I thought was kind of important, but now I can't remember it because everything is so effing crazy.
Well, we're going to, before I go to the next caller, we're going to treat everybody to just a little bit of Lady Antebellum, so you take the blame on this one, okay?
Oh, shoot. Okay, that's some insipid music. Enjoy.
No, no, we won't any more than we enjoy Toby Keith, but...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's those blind references that get us in trouble. Later, Sandra.
All right, bye.
Bye now. See the trouble I get in? This is the audio off the video of the song that Sandra referred to. This is Lady Antebellum's Need You Now. Wow, the waves of insipid are already rolling over me. What's with the noise in the background? What is this, Pink Floyd Goes Country? Trying to give it a chance, but we got to the, no, it's a quarter after one and I'm liquored up and I want to have sex with you that I won't remember that I had. from lady up in the big house, Lady Antebellum. Yeah, what? No, you know, it's there's Aunt Pearl and Aunt B and Aunt Bellum. See, that's how that works. I gotta admit that I'd sort of had that thing. I'd looked at the name of that band a couple of times, and I thought, what? But sometimes I see these things and I go, no. That's Bob. That's just you being overly sensitive and crazy. But it turns out it's not, because when it lights up the Sandra barometer, I know that Houston, we have a problem. We move onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, what's up, Jim?
Oh, not a whole lot. I appreciate your giving me some time about Lobo and Blanca the other night. I do indeed.
Oh, well, you know, the nice thing about that conversation was that it proved to have more context than either you or I might have otherwise imagined.
Thanks, sir. Moving on to Fred Phelps. One of my favorite people, as you well know.
Oh, you're on the Christmas card list, aren't you?
Oh, definitely I am. And, of course, I'm looking at theadvocate.com, which is a gay publication. And this is what it says about Fred Phelps. You want to hear this?
Do please.
Okay. According to a profile by CNN, Phelps may well be known for his hateful messages against gays. But there's another Phelps that few know. He was a brilliant civil rights attorney in the 1960s who would take on any racial discrimination cases that had no other lawyers that lawyers would touch, says longtime African-American civic leaders in Topeka. He fought for the rights of blacks, they say, with the same passion that he now reserves for the condemnation of gays. So back in the 60s, he was a very pro-civil rights lawyer who worked in hand in glove with the NAACP to fight discrimination.
There's more. I've read that before, Jim, and there's more to it than that. The other part of it is that the only reason that he went into that particular field was not related to any sense that people were being done unjustly, but rather that there was a fortune to be made in it. And he did. He made a fortune. He even went so far, I believe, as suing his own clients over fees.
Well, I thought that was quite remarkable that, you know, he would execute such a turnabout that he would do so. And according to the remainder of this article, that I think he did so on a, well, it says here, did so without charge. I don't know. But, I mean, I thought that was quite remarkable that this man, who is such an apostle of hatred and discrimination, would at one time have begun his legal career as a proponent for an advocate for the civil rights of African Americans.
Well, you know, that's the thing. The suit that's currently under scrutiny in the Supreme Court is a civil rights suit. There's not much. It makes sense insofar as they've merely transferred from one money-making source to another. But yeah, the whole history of Fred Phelps's litigation experience is quite checkered.
Oh, I've no doubt. And like I say before, if I were near Fred Phelps, I would take one of his signs and I would give him a proctological examination with it. But, you know, that's how I feel about that horrible individual.
Well, you notice that he's sort of gone by the wayside. He may be out somewhere gumming his oatmeal at this point, because Margie has taken over where he left off. That's why she argued the case before the Supremes.
Well, you know, he is an example to me that the old axiom that ugly buildings, whores, and politicians, if they hang around long enough, will not gain respectability. And I hope that that will not apply. I hope that will apply to him. But you know, if you look back at the history of certain people, like, for example, like William Jennings Bryan, remember him?
You know, it's odd you would bring him up, because David in Tennessee just sent me a note, and he said even William Jennings Bryan loved the working man before he went nuts to take us all to his God by creating a theocracy.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, he did love the working man. And he did support the rights of miners, workers, and he did support programs that would help the poor. And then, of course, he got involved in this 1923 Scopes Monkey trial, in which he was pitted against Clarence Darrow. Of course, he technically won that case, but was about to embark upon some type of countrywide crusade, but he died, and that was the end of William Jennings Bryan, who made the statement, "Thou shalt not crucify a man on a cross of gold." And I found this out last night when I was watching this PBS series called God in America, which is extremely good, and I would encourage any listener to watch it, because it does give you a very, very concise and an extremely objective point of view on religion in America, beginning with the Puritans, going right on straight through, and tonight's the last night, beginning at 2100 or 9 o'clock, on PBS, and it's going to go through, the role of that particular...
Well, if it was objective, as you note, I can imagine the right wing has probably somewhere, if I went looking, screamed about how heathenistic and demon-infested it is. because that's the problem. An objective examination of things like right-wing intolerance or religion industry intolerance, no matter the century, is always, it's unfair, because the right-wing religion industry only wants to hear propaganda that is beneficial to their own arguments.
Well, I think PBS is noted for giving both sides of the equation.
Well, I know. That's the whole point.
That's in my experience.
And you know how much the right wing despises PBS. To the point of, do you remember during the Bush administration, Jim, when they started the process of insinuating loyal Bushies into the Corporation for Public Broadcasting?
Yes, I do.
Well, that's why.
Well, as a matter of fact, I think the Bush administration would have preferred to have eliminated PBS from the public airwaves. That's the impression that I received of their attitude towards it and the programs and things of that nature. And they tried to do it by, cutting funding mechanisms and things of that nature, all types of ways to destroy a program. You know that, and I know that.
Sure.
And another thing here is this repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. It is odd to me that the log cabin Republicans, the gay Republicans, are trying to get that thing repealed and are in their own way being a greater proponent for gay rights than the current Obama administration.
But they never do anything that doesn't have a motive.
Well, I mean, regardless of what their motive is, if they can get it repealed, I think it'd be great if they could, as long as it's not going to be replaced.
Well, what stuns me is this report that the Obama administration, who finally has, a bully boy to pick on, we didn't have anything to do with that, that's just the courts, that's those activist judges again, and they're going to appeal it. They're going to appeal this ruling.
They have the... I don't think they have done so yet. They have the right to, but they don't know what... Now, a judge ordered that the doctrine be repealed, and I think the government has 60 days in which they can take a position on it to further present the argument.
Right, and news for what they're worth, for-profit media outlets like CNN in this particular case reporting... Officials familiar with the case said that the appeal could be filed within the next day or two.
Good. Conditional. Good. But they haven't yet.
That's about as optimistic as you can get about it.
Well, you can never tell. And I would hope that...
But again, as Sandra noted, the defense secretary came out and hollered that he wanted an appeal.
Well, the defense secretary can holler and yell all he wants to, but he serves at the pleasure of the president. He is the president's appointee, and it was President Obama who gave Gates his job. Now, if the president has any courage, any spirit upon which he was elected, and promised, then he would have a word of prayer with Secretary Gates. Secretary Gates does not run this country. The president does. Secretary Gates is not in the Oval Office. He's behind his desk at the Pentagon, and he takes his marching orders from President Obama. And so does the entire National Command Authority. So... Maybe I'm being foolishly optimistic, but I think that perhaps there is a chance to repeal this hateful, hurtful, and totally ineffective doctrine that has hurt the military more than anything in the world. I mean, the Pentagon, during Don't Ask, Don't Tell, has spent more money on witch hunts and the ruination of certain careers that they even probably did before that doctrine was okay by William Jester Clinton. So we'll see. And, you know, it's odd that the that any effort to make a situation better would come from the right, more so than it has come from the so-called left or progressives in the Obama administration. I don't know. And this entire thing gives me cause for considerable consternation. It's not going to affect me now, but I hope that they can find their way to spend the money that they have spent in years past on hurting and ruining people and breaking their spirits and breaking their hearts, and as well as ruining their careers. I hope they can find their way to overcome these prejudices. I just hope so. I mean, even though we are facing very dark times and ominous results from the November election, I would hope that there is some type of ray of hope on the horizon. That's just my own personal position there.
I think, Jim, anyone, well, you know what my position's always been. Anything that expands rights for individuals, that expands expands upon individual liberties, has to be a net good thing for a nation that calls itself free.
Well, I would hope so. And that's that's the very basis upon which this country.
But at the then also it's hard to avoid this observation. At the same time that you note what the log cabin Republicans did, remember Robert Gates got into the Pentagon not at the behest of Barack Obama, but at the behest of George W. Bush. Robert Gates was only prorogued into the job by Barack Obama upon his accession to the office.
Well, the reason Obama continued Gates was because he needed someone to provide some type of continuity of doctrine as well as practice, considering Obama's position on continuing the wars in Afghanistan and Iran. And unfortunately, if I were President Obama, I would not have reappointed Mr. Gates. I would have said, thank you, I have my own appointee, but he elected because of Mr. Gates' institutional knowledge of the Pentagon, that he allowed him to continue to serve based upon what I've just said. So there it is, and there you have it. I mean, if I had been President Bill Clinton back in 1994, I would never have okayed such a policy, because Clinton just did that and did so breaking every promise he'd ever made to a lot of people who helped him get into office. So I would hope that the president would, you know, let him know, look, I'm the boss and the buck stops here. And if you don't like it, then hit the road. That's it. Maybe I see things in black and white too much. Maybe that's just my background, but that's just me. Oh, I have a note for Juanita if she'd like to listen, if she is listening.
Okay.
My cat hit his collars a week ago.
And you can't find them anywhere.
Well, just a minute. After I'd gone through the process of reordering a collar and having special tags made with the rabies identification number, numbers to call, and this, that, and the other, guess what came to light this afternoon?
Brought him to you, did she?
He did.
Oh, he did. Okay.
In his mouth, said, look here, got you something.
You know, I've got a friend who said if they ever develop thumbs, the human race is done.
I think your friend is right, but I thought to myself, you son of a gun, I swear. You really know how to put it.
Well, Jim, I mean, did you ask him where he put his collar?
I did.
And then he went and got it for you.
Well, he did on his own time after he probably knew that I had gone through all this trouble to contact a website that will provide these services that I've just described and giving me new ID tags for him. Because, I mean, you know, if something were to happen to me, if I were to be incapacitated, and if he were to get out or whatever, those would be his only tickets to freedom. But anyway, he didn't...
Well, you know what? I think you've got a cat with foresight, Jim. He realized he only had one. He needed two in case one ever got lost.
Well, I believe in redundancy.
Well, exactly, I know you do. You've got a sense for the importance of systemic redundancy. And apparently so, too, does your feline companion.
Apparently so. But I thought to myself, well. And even when I began to order these new items, I knew he was going to do this. And I said, you may as well have a backup because this could happen again.
There you go.
I just wish that people in our government would perhaps think ahead, as did my cat, and say, well, maybe I need a backup and something to fall back on. But by the way, and let me let you go here. I know you've got people waiting for you. There is a link, and I sent this to you, Lobo and Blanco, The Wolf That Changed America. It's the whole story, and it's very interesting. And there are a number of comments that have been made on that site about, you know, this particular situation. But anyway, let's continue to hope that things will get a little bit better instead of a lot worse, but who knows? I don't know. I've already voted, so I've cast my ballot, and it's a paper ballot, so we'll see. And I did enjoy your candidate the other night. He was extremely helpful, beneficial, as I said to you in the email that you read to your audience, and I hope he does have a chance.
Well, I don't know what the numbers will be, Jim, but this is my own unscientific polling, but I'm seeing a lot of indications that there are a lot of people giving Jesse Johnson, the Mountain Party candidate, the only liberal running in the Senate race in West Virginia, that they're giving him a real hard look. You know, because I don't know if you've heard this latest, poor John Racy. All he has is an announcer voice. The rest of him is just, everything outside the voice box is pure 100% unadulterated stupid. And I don't throw stupid around a whole lot, but this man is incredibly uninformed, unintelligent, uneducated. You know, what does it take when a guy to look somebody in the eye and offer as a straight answer, not a smart-ass answer, but a straight answer, Jim, upon being asked about his wealth? I earned my money the old-fashioned way. I inherited it. God, that sounds like something out of a Mel Brooks movie, you know?
Well, yeah. Have you seen some of the anti-racist ads?
Oh, yeah.
Actually hired actors from Canada to come down and pose as West Virginians.
I thought they were from Philadelphia, but...
One said Philadelphia, one said Canada, and because his wife is registered in Florida...
She can't vote for him.
No.
No.
I mean, he's just a big bag of wind, and the thing he has that keeps him inflated in his Levi's and his whatever shirt he's wearing is his money and some type of PR firm that has packaged him into being something which he is totally not. I mean, he's just a bought and paid for.
Okay, well, and the thing is, it only gets worse, Jim. That's what I was getting at. He was interviewed by ABC News and was asked about the current sock puppet seat warmer up in Washington. You know, I've talked about him. His name's Cart Goodwin.
Right.
Well, Racy has rechristened him Clark Goodman. And then last month he was asked about the United States Supreme Court, and of course he had to opine, but once he started the opining process, Jim, he couldn't remember Sonia Sotomayor's name. Now, if I were to give you a million guesses, you would not come up with what he decided Sonia Sotomayor's name was.
What did that fool say?
This is the quote. Was it Sarah Manor? Sarah Minorgan? Sarah Morgan? His campaign spokesman says, well, you got him. John's not good with names.
Bob, John's not good with a lot of things.
John's not good with brains.
No, he isn't. And the guy who's running against Nick Rahal.
Oh, Spike.
Spike Maynard, those lovely pictures of him and Don Blankenship having their good times on the French Riviera. Well, that's something else to behold, too, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It's swanning about. Where's the slushy machine? I don't like this French wine. It goes on. Racy has referred to, and you know what? This is in the same vein as I found. You know, I found that Spike Maynard ad against Nick Rahal so unutterably sleazy. The ones where, you know, why, he's part of Arabs for Obama. You saw it. It was disgusting. Well,
I've seen him, and he looks like something out of one of these horror movies. He looks like something that's just come out of a funeral home that's been overly waxed and this, that, and the other. He's just one of the most incredibly mean-spirited people that I've ever seen.
Well, apparently that kind of thing, you know, the apple falleth not far from the repiglic and, bigotry tree. Earlier this year, John Racy was asked about Governor Manchin, and you know, I hold no brief for Governor Manchin, but I do hate this kind of sleazy business. He referred to Joe Manchin as Governor Soprano.
You know, this is the thing, Bob. I don't understand why these people feel that all of this negative and hateful campaigning. I mean, to whom does this appeal? It doesn't appeal to me.
No. But you know what? He offered, when he was criticized for the Governor Soprano remark, John Racy did what Republicans always do when they get caught with their bias showing, with their bigotry showing, with their prejudice showing. He blamed it on someone else. Do you remember when, not too long back, of course, when Dr. Laura Schlesinger offloaded 11 instances of that hate-filled epithet that begins with N, 11 instances of it in, 5 minutes? Remember that? And then when she was criticized about it, she said she was going to quit her job so she could get her First Amendment back because we'd become too politically correct. Recall? Well, when John Racy was asked about his Governor Soprano remark, Racy said, the trouble with America here today is that we've lost our sense of humor.
Sense of humor.
See, he's not a bigot.
You know, I don't consider the welfare of this country and the position it is going to have to take its population through the 21st century. I don't consider that humorous. No more than I do these things that I've heard about Adolf Hitler. I mean, to me, there is nothing funny about Adolf Hitler. Nothing. The only thing funny I ever saw about Adolf Hitler was back when I first saw the movie The Producers with Vera Mostel and Gene Wilder. But other than that, there is nothing funny at all about people like Adolf Hitler or any of the people who subscribe to his doctrines or policies. I mean, these people are dangerous, and they are inimical to anything this country was built upon, what it should stand for, and what it should believe in. But there are people who will take stuff like this, who are so stupidly wooden and woodenly stupid, and they probably will take something else from it. It just absolutely boggles the mind. It does to me. Nothing funny about people like this.
No, but it is par for the course, and it's especially noteworthy among right wingers, Jim, because when you call one of them for telling the sick, making sick remarks like Governor Soprano or whatever, they'll blame you. And they'll say it's because you're politically correct. And what they mean, again, that's all code, Jim, and you know the language code. That's all code for, I resent the fact that I can't say those words in public anymore.
Well, I can tell you this. When I hear people call names like Governor Soprano, when I can, hear a political candidate compared to a mafia don in New Jersey.
You say that very well, by the way, Jersey.
Been around that part of the country a good bit. But nonetheless, it really just, it just reminds me of just how low the whole political system has come, and the methods of campaigning are, and it is no great surprise to me that so many people had decided, I'm just going to stay home on election day. I mean, they are so put off with it.
And guess what? I was about to say, Jim, never forget where this latest round of politics in the toilet comes from. This is not something that both sides did.
Well, I can remember when it first really got its birthright under Lee Atwater.
There you go. And then there's Jesse Helms's ad. Remember that? The hands ad?
I had...
And it's... just let me finish real quick. We have to bear in mind that the purpose for all of this political filth is precisely designed for what we're seeing. It is, in fact, as you note, to turn people off the political process. It is because... There has never been an election in the United States, as long as there have been Republicans, in which low voter turnout did not benefit the Republican.
Bob, when I first moved to D.C. back in a long time ago, Jesse Helms, Pat, and I still have South Carolina tags on my car. I didn't have district tags on my car. And Jesse Helms passed me. I recognized him. I mean, who could not? Like Jabba the Hutt driving a boat. And he blew his horn and waved at me.
Because you had them South Carolina tags.
And I gave him his finger.
Atta boy, Jim.
I sure did. And I will never forget when ACT UP went to his house in Arlington, and somehow they had managed to cobble together a condom the size of the Hindenburg, and they put it over his house. And he really got all upset about that. Well, Jesse has gone to his reward, I think, and, But anyway, I had the pleasure, while crossing the 14th Street Bridge, of giving that old so-and-so the one-digit salute. And on that note, I'm going to leave you where I found you and let you get on to your next caller. Okay?
All right, Jim, you take care.
Good night.
My best to the cats.
Meow.
Yeah, bye now. And that is, of course, the inimitable Jim. It's about 10 minutes before the hour. We will roll merrily along, but not to there. Hey, welcome to the program.
That Lady Antebellum chorus reminds me surprisingly, like, I am the sky.
Oh, my God, David. I was sitting there thinking, wait a minute, where have I heard that? What? It is. They've lifted Alan Parsons.
I know. That reminds me of that website that I love so much of whoever put up a website where they play two Nickelback songs at once, and they both overlap each other ingeniously. So
is that kind of like watching The Wizard of Oz and starting Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon at the same time?
Yeah, it's sort of like that. So I'm calling because I said I was going to give you the review of the Casino Jack.
Yes.
Alex Gibney film. but before I do that, a little story on how this will all tie together at the end of the call. I was watching Island of the Seas, an IMAX film about the Cocos Island, and one of the scenes in behind the scenes. You'll know where I'm going with this when I say it, but is a scene of a hermit crab getting replacing himself inside another shell that he found on the ocean floor. So I'm watching the behind the scenes, and when I watched it, I was like, wow, that's amazing. It's like to see something like that. And then they talked about how they filmed the scene, and what they did was, since it was filmed during the El Nino, and the film was completely had been devastated. What they did was they put a shell on the bottom, so the hermit crab was happy to have discovered a new shell. But since the IMAX film camera can only roll in at 15 minutes a shot, it takes a minute to set up the shot. So what do you think they did, Bob?
Oh, no.
They took the old shell and they replaced it in front of the other one. And what do you know? The hermit crab sees it on the ocean floor again. It says, hot damn, a new shell.
New digs.
And it gets out of the shell. Now I was surprised because they did this, I'm not kidding you, they did this 5 or 6 times to get this shot. And every single time...
Marker! Hermit crab moves in.
Yeah.
Take two. Yeah, oh my God. You know, we brought a couple of those home from the beach way back when the family was able to take vacations.
Right.
The hermit crabs don't do well in West Virginia. No matter how hard you try, but you know what you got to do is you got to buy them a couple of shells, a couple of empties, and that's where they get you. The crab's cheap, the shells are expensive.
Mm. Yeah, so it gives a whole new meaning to the word shell game. and so the Casino Jack, which reminds me partially of this, for some reason. That starts out, as everyone knows, Jack Abramoff was a college Republican, and he got his start with Ralph Reed and Grover Norquist. But one thing that I found very surprisingly interesting in the movie, and I don't think many people know about this, because we cover so much about the influence of Atlas Shrugged, but there was another book, Bob, that spearheaded the whole USSR-Soviet paranoia, which was called The Spike. Have you heard of this book?
No.
Well, Spike is about what would happen if the Soviet Union were planning for world conquest, and the plot, now this is where it gets spooky, ladies and gentlemen, it seems to partly to consist of suborning journalists to print stories favorable to the Soviet Union and discreditable to the United States, and partly in making the Institute for Progressive Reform in Washington a controlling think tank nonetheless. So what's interesting about that is as you watch the movie in Casino Jack and when they talk about the USSR, Here's another interesting thing about that. Grover Norquist was a Lenin scholar to the nth degree. And they show his high school photo, Bob, and he looks just like, who does he look like? He looks like Lenin. So you're looking at Grover Norquist, and you're looking at, and he's got the Lenin facial hair and everything, except he's wearing long hair of the 70s. So it looks like he's going to be a roadie for the USSR Eagles or something. And
oh, that took a minute to land, David.
Yeah, so, I mean, while I'm watching this film, I'm learning that this book
Welcome to the Hotel Vladivostok.
There you go. There you go. The book is surprisingly exactly what they're doing now, which is they've embedded think tanks all across Washington, D.C., and it's what we talked about before, Bob. It's not that they hate these people. It's that they're envious of it. And they're completely envious in a way where they took this book, people who are listening to it, called The Spike by Borchov and Moss, was actually the spearhead for the USSR protests and really invigorated all of these college Republicans across the country. I had no idea about this, Bob. And
I have a feeling I'm going to have to read it.
No, you don't. You can just go on wikispooks.com and you can find out, like, they lay out the whole details of this crappy, crappy novel. But it's once again, and guess who recommended, see, this stuff travels in so easily. Guess who recommended this book first for everybody to jump on board and read it? Michael Ledeen. Michael Ledeen said, this is an outstanding novel.
Well, you know, at least, I guess it's old enough that there's no way you could have said Glenn Beck, but I'm...
But when watching this movie, there are so many great details. I'll try to hash it out as fast as I can. One of the things that was interesting was they said when they showed remember they had the photos of George Bush and Abramoff? And they put them out to the press. Well, Gimney said one of the tricks they did was they didn't show, they made an excuse for not giving a color photo. They gave them a Xerox. So when they put the Xerox up on the internet, you couldn't print it in paper. It didn't look nice anywhere, so you rarely saw that photo. And I thought that's an interesting trick altogether, what they did. They didn't give them any black and white. They just gave them a Xerox. I was like, that's some gangster shit right there.
That's slick.
And the other interesting thing, Bob, and this goes back to a lot of people who think Obama is playing 11-dimensional chess or something like this. Alex Gibney originally, and this is a fact, people, originally wanted Jack to be in the movie. Jack wanted to be in the movie. They got Bob Ney, they got Neil Vost, they got Adam Guyman, they got a lot of the players in the play, so to speak. But the Department of Justice, under the Obama administration, was scared to death of what Jack would say, and he wasn't even allowed to take those conversations. I don't even think he recorded the conversations. So whatever Jack told him about how Washington works, or would give us an insight into how Washington works and the players that were not taken down, because this was kind of a thing that Jack was wondering while he was in the cell, and I found this interesting as well, is that Jack was wondering why there were so many people involved, but they didn't have that, but they were able to skate by. And one of the things that he said, and this is fascinating, was that Ralph Reed, I'm sure we wondered why Ralph Reed didn't testify. And Jack said one of the interesting things about this, he said that Ralph Reed was going to be subpoenaed, and he was going to testify. But the call came from Karl Rove and said, allegedly, that you will not in any way, shape, or form put Ralph Reed, because he is the face of the conservative movement, and he would greatly tarnish the conservative coalition. And I thought that was interesting, that that's all Karl Rove had to say, and away goes Ralph Reed. Away. And the other interesting thing that they never explain, why Grover Norquist never testified. And when they go into the movie and they talk about it, there's so many great things. Bob, you really have to see the film. I'm putting a push for it. It's going to go in the Horn Archives. Gibney did an amazing job on it. There's a scene in it where they actually pull out Michael Scanlon as a lifeguard, and the person who got the footage, because apparently, I don't know if people know this, but Michael Scanlon, the press secretary for Tom DeLay, had this fascination with being a lifeguard to the point of...
A lifeguard?
Yes, he went to the actual beach like a gay Baywatch or something. That's what the footage looks like. I'm not slandering gays in any way. It looked like a gay Baywatch. He had that He had that pontoon behind him. He was running on the beach, and apparently they did not want this footage to get out. But Alex Gibney really hit the street, and he found this footage, and it's given to him anonymously because they're scared of Michael Scanlon's name. You'll find this funny. He likes to call himself Michael P.S. Scanlon. Do you want to take a guess at what P.S. stands for?
I don't have it in me.
Purely sexy. So what he did was, the reason why he did this...
My name is Michael Danger Scanlon.
Yes, yes. And when you see the footage, Bob, you just start laughing because you see all of these guys with their shirts off, running in shorts, and it's like you can almost hear the Baywatch theme in the background. It's like, oh, my God, whoever gave this footage, you are the man.
That or the A-Team theme.
That or the A-Team theme, correct. And they go into the fact that they started a think tank over there. And they had it in a the guy that they wanted to make the president, who was named Dave Ghosh. He was actually just he wasn't qualified to run anything. He just shucked oysters for a living, and he lived in the basement. He lived in the attic. You can't make this shit up. He lived.
It's even getting to you.
I know you can't make it up. I mean, he lived in the attic, and then. All through the whole house is where they installed the computers and they ran this, I forget the name of the think tank. And, I mean, there's little gems like that all through this movie. I mean, they talk about how he set up this, the voice of Stanley Tucci is played by Jack. So, when they do these cut action scenes, you learn a lot about the personality and the characteristics of this guy who was a high school powerlifter and why he decided to get into politics and college Republicans and his mindset of what he believed in, and it's just insane. And you know, they talk about Ralph Reed, and one of the great quotes is they said Jack is the type of guy that would sweet-talk a dog off a meat truck. I thought, that is too good.
Hey, Grandpa, what's for supper? Yum, yum.
So, when you watch this movie, and here's the other thing that I would suggest. The commentary, if you can get a chance, Bob, I would put it in the background and just listen to what Alex Gibney has to say about the details, about all of these people. What he talks about Bob Ney and how this is interesting, before I go. Ney, when he was in prison, guess what they would show before the movies? I found this fascinating.
Oh, no.
In all the prisons, this is something that they would show. They would show a reel of Fox News.
Oh, Jesus.
So this makes you think, like, why does Fox News have a... Well, I think we know why, but that to me is so blatant. You go in to see a movie... And before you go see a movie, you see a Fox News reel. And it's things like
And there's
that.
No Bugs Bunny cartoon after, is there?
And the other thing I found interesting was that I didn't know this, but did you know Bob Ney has a radio show?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I haven't listened to it. I'm eager to listen to this craziness. Because the craziness that he talks about... In the movie, I mean, they actually got Tom DeLay interview. Wow. Tom DeLay, you want to talk about a piece of work. Deny, 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 deny. I just want to be seen. I don't care if I look like a blithering liar. Everyone else was just like, no, I don't think I'm going to do that. But he was the one guy, and Bob Ney, and they were like, and it was just surprising to see him when he was talking about how, well, when I went to the Marianas Islands, I didn't see any abuses. Like, he actually looked for him. So, you know, I didn't see anything corrupt. And then they talked to someone who decided not to be part of this Marianas Island scam. And, again, they have such great footage in this movie. I mean, the footage that they dug up through the Freedom of Information Act is just amazing. So if anyone wants to see a great film, and just to tie it what I talked about originally in the beginning, it really is the ultimate hermit crab shell game. Casino Jack, and you should sit down and watch the 2 hours if you can this weekend. And I would love to hear somebody's take on it, but it's just an eye opener from beginning to end of all the people that of how much they were able to get in this movie. And I recommend it for people to watch it. And to me, it's the eternal shell game that's happening with us right now, and it ties into what Sandra was talking about. Ties into what Jim is talking. It ties into what everyone's talking about.
Well, you've certainly piqued my curiosity.
Well, I mean, the work that he, let's put it this way, the work that he did with Enron, smartest guys in the room.
Yeah, oh, that was brilliant.
I think he topped himself with this.
No kidding.
I really do. On all levels, I mean, all of the interviews. Oh my God, all of the interviews, all of the things that I couldn't get to in time. All of the quotes, all of the background stories, the murder of the Sun Cruise.
Yeah, that one's always been, yeah.
I mean, it's all there. And they have such great footage and such great interaction. But, yeah, it's just like that scene. And in the bottom, in that IMAX movie with the shell game. Hey, look, a shell. I think I'll just get in here.
Time-lapse photography.
Yeah, time-lapse. It's an eye-opener. But anyways.
I understand, but, well, ultimately, now, having seen it, do you have a verdict? I mean, is it a good movie, but... What does it do?
It will really sour your relationship when it comes to the two political parties and why they don't want to bring anyone, quote unquote, justice. And the fact that they wouldn't let Jack talk, and I'm talking about the Obama administration people in the Justice Department, it really makes you wonder. And even Alex Gibney says in the commentary, he says, it's so bizarre. He goes, what right do they have of not of Jack's participation not being in this film? And he goes, and I started to think about it. The trial.
Well, isn't he on probation? They can say anything they want to as a condition of probation, can't they?
Well, there were
or parole maybe.
There were little things that was it was just he said it, that there was it didn't make sense, the fact that they wouldn't let him talk in the way that he wanted to about, but obviously we know why. The revolving doors and the secrecy and how Washington, D.C. works. It's that imaginary, you know, Democrats need to get over this, Bob. Eventually we're going to need to have to face the madness, as I call it.
And you know, Ron and Raleigh just pointing out to me that Bob Ney occasionally... shows up on the Tom Hartman show. I had no idea.
I've not heard him do that in a while, so I guess I'm going to have to stay tuned and listen to his radio show. I heard he had, one of the stories he had on was about UFOs in the...
Well, I think he's got something to do with Talk Radio News Service.
Oh, boy. Talk Radio News Network?
No, talk. Well, okay, but I thought it was Talk Radio News Service.
There's so many. there's so many different ones under that umbrella. That's
yeah. Texas Betsy confirming. Yeah, he does stuff as part of Talk Radio News Service. That's the gig. He got that gig when he got out of prison and went to the halfway house.
Well, I'm gonna have to look into that, and I'll send you the info on the. On that book, The Spike, and you can
do please. I will go and seek and read and.
But you know what? It's
have my eyes cross and
exactly what they wanted, Bob.
It's not as poorly written as Ayn Rand is it?
Oh, it is exactly what they wanted.
Oh, thanks for the affirmation.
Exactly what they wanted, Bob. They got in a fiction novel, and they brought it to life better than I think they ever could imagine with these think tanks. The press, and they learned it all from the U.S. and they learned it all from a USSR spy novel. Michael Ledeen, you diabolical bastard.
Well, you know, Jim just wrote in and he said, just when one thinks the screen has reached the height of its fulfillment, new wonders indeed appear. Do we need any more? A right-wing film, I Want Your Money, hits the marquee soon.
Oh, I heard about that. And the guy who's behind that, Bob, you have to you have to look into his background. What a piece of work that guy is. The director is obviously doing that because...
Is it Kirk Cameron? No, I'm sorry.
It's not Kirk Cameron, but it's a guy who has a bit of a corruption in his past. Go figure, huh?
Yeah, I'll imagine.
And on that note, Bob, I want people to I give the thumbs up, the two thumbs up to Casino Jack, and maybe you can play some USSR Eagles on the way out.
you put that one out. Yeah, do svidaniya, Igalovich.
Yeah.
Later, David.
All right, later.
Bye now. Okay, that's a must-watch. Required viewing. 11 minutes past the third hour of the program here. We move on.
Bob.
Hey, Juanita.
I'm shocked.
Why? What'd I do?
Well, you're not playing The Great Debate.
Oh, I've got my tweet deck up and running here, and I'm seeing these occasional updates about what's going on in the O'Dummel-Coons debate. Is that the one to which you were referring?
Yeah, it's on CNN.
Oh, you're kidding.
No, I'm not. I got CNN on because I want to see what's happening with the minors, you know.
Yeah, they're almost all out, aren't they?
Last count I heard was 29. They should be coming up with at least 30. Then they've... I think there's two more or three more, and then there's the four workers, rescue workers. I wanted to bring up about something Sandy said about signing a loyalty oath.
She
probably knows, but a lot of people, I don't think, know that back when Nixon was in office that I don't know if it was just government jobs or what, but you had to sign a loyalty oath or you would get fired, and people did get fired. And at the time, I was working for Agriculture Department, and I held off for a long time, but my boss kind of thought like we would be traitors and whatever, you know, so I decided I'd sign it. But I do know somebody that worked at the library, and I don't know how, I guess that's local government, but they actually got fired because they refused to sign it. But I forget how long that lasted, but I went around, I told what I was doing. I had to go in people's homes and write down things about them, but for them not to know. So I wasn't feeling comfortable about it. And people say, well, what kind of work do you do? And I said, well, I'm a spy for the United States government. But, I mean, I just, stupid me, you know. I mean, I should have, but that's the way I've just always been screwed up that way. And what was this thing about the cat that he lost his collar?
Yeah, Jim's cat lost his collar. Well, he went and hit his collar.
I didn't understand a lot of what was being said.
Yeah, Jim's cat went and hit his collar.
Golly.
And then as soon as Jim had finished spending money and ordering new collar, new identification and everything online, he brought the collar back.
That's pretty good.
No, it's a smart cat. You know, if you need one, you should own. If you need one, you should own two.
Yeah.
You know, that's the... that's the only way the horn can operate. You know, we've got to have a backup computer.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're a cat, you got to have a backup collar.
Yeah. I love that Lobo story, too, that Jim told. I love... Wolves are fascinating animals, you know.
You know what else are fascinating? Alligators.
Well,
and I only mention that, Juanita, because you've got them down there. You're supposed to have them.
Oh yeah.
Here in West Virginia, we're not supposed to have alligators.
But you did.
But we do. Some state officials from the Department of Natural Resources just got done shooting and killing a 67-inch long alligator.
That's pretty big.
That ain't a bad one. I mean, that's a 5'7" alligator.
Mm-hmm.
In a West Virginia wildlife management area.
And DNR, Department of Natural Resources, Wildlife Resources Chief Curtis Taylor said, "Yeah, we went out there, and there he was on the bank eating a pretty good-sized bass." Well, you know, here in West Virginia, we can spot a bass from about 6 miles out, but it wasn't a catfish, wasn't a sun perch, a pretty good sized bass. I just don't know if it was smallmouth or largemouth.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of
wasn't a crappie
down here.
But what I find interesting is the end of the story. Curtis said there are two possible scenarios for how the alligator got into the lake. It was either a pet that outgrew its welcome, or it was a spring break prank that went bad.
Yeah.
And he said, no alligator could live through a West Virginia winter, so we went ahead and killed it quick instead of having it die a slow, miserable death. Well, I got to say one thing.
What?
Global warming? Climate change? Eventually, I know from where I grew up.
Oh, I got you.
That, alligators, Florida, sure.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, there's alligators along the Gulf Coast in Mobile Bay in Alabama. But I was told a few years ago that they've gotten into the Joe Wheeler Wildlife Refuge up in northwest Alabama, where they ought not be.
Oh.
So they're moving north as the weather changes. Same thing with, those great big giant creepy cockroaches. They call them palmetto bugs.
Yeah.
Big, nasty, and they squish real bad. Well, they're moving north too as the weather gets warmer.
Yeah, like down here, it's not a disgrace if you have a few roaches because everybody does pretty much. But I guess up north, except New York City or something, But, since I've got these cats, I don't have any more lizards around.
No, lizards.
They do keep the rats down.
Yeah, lizards are feline chew toys.
But you know what? I used to be scared to death of lizards, and I got to where I kind of like them.
Oh, they're cute.
The little green ones, especially the little babies, they're so cute. But if they get inside, they can't find. They don't know how to find water, and they'll shrivel up. But I've been noticing I had a bunch of them, and then when I got reloaded on cats, they started a bunch of them. I mean, I haven't seen any at all. But did you get my email about that gentleman, about the spokesman?
Yes.
Do you know him?
I didn't recognize his name right off the bat, but I've recognized the name, but I can't place it, if you know what I mean.
Did you have a chance to read it?
Yeah, I did.
I thought he was, I think he took Chris by surprise, all he said.
Yeah, Tony Opgard.
Yeah, he got the unions in and, all of that about the gangster cold places and all.
But what I liked better was this story you sent me about Jeb Bush is now suing. it's Jeb versus Deb, and this fits because we started the program talking about a little bit of legal shenanigans.
Yeah.
It's Jeb with an exclamation point versus Deb with an exclamation point. Jebby Bush has sued or is threatening to sue Deborah Giannoulis. Now, Ms. Giannoulis is a candidate for the Florida State Senate, and she's been using a red logo that says Deb with an exclamation point. It's red. The logo's red, exclamation point, and it's done in white lettering. And Jeb says that she's a violating his trademark. Trademark number 2826942.
Yeah. Isn't that something?
Well, you know what I find fascinating is that there is no end, Juanita. There is no end to the audacious. What am I looking for here? The absolute shocking degree to which the Bush family thinks that they have a claim on every blessed thing under the sun.
Yeah.
Bush is threatening to sue a woman for infringing on his exclamation mark.
Well, you know, they bought, years ago, they bought a bunch of water rights all over the world.
But I mean, what kind of brass would you have to have, Juanita? What kind of gall would you have to have to say, by God, you can't use an exclamation mark. I am a Bush, and I'm the only one who can use an exclamation point. Or I'll sue you.
And it's only two letters, alike his, you know. But, yeah, that water thing is really something else.
Oh, I know, but she has no right. She has no right to have a name that rhymes with Jeb Bush.
I know.
I thought they didn't like. I thought that wouldn't that be activist judging?
I don't know what they think. It's like Sanders said, everything is just crazier and crazier.
Well, it is, and you know, up here, I don't know if you recall as far back as Monday, but talking about that. Joe Manchin rifle ad.
Yeah.
You know, the one where he shoots the cap and trade bill, the communist cap and trade bill.
Yeah.
Do you know how the Republican Party in West Virginia responded to that? This is hilarious.
What? I didn't.
Oh, this is going to hurt you. They complained that Joe Manchin is a scofflaw because he wasn't wearing his blaze orange like every good hunter should. You know, because we got to wear during deer season. Now, it doesn't apply to turkey season in the spring. But during deer season, if you go into the woods, you have to wear a certain amount of square inches of blaze orange so you won't be shot for a deer.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Wow.
So the Republican Party, remember, this is the party that hates them government intrusion into our lives.
Yeah.
The Republican Party that wants to get the government off our back.
Yeah.
And they hate all sorts of regulations.
Right.
Well, having to wear blaze orange is a regulation.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's not. Yeah, that's wrong.
But you know, I did hear that the Joe Manchin has invited Barack Obama to come deer hunting with him in West Virginia.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Yeah. He's got him a set of commemorative West Virginia deer hunting antlers to wear while they go a hunting.
I tell you,
since he's the governor, right, and Barack Obama, he's going to get him a special dispensation where he doesn't have to wear any of that freedom infringing blaze orange. Yeah, you just put these antlers on and sit there in the bushes, Mr. President. Because I kid, but it makes me very, very angry because I realized, you know, when you're talking about Barack Obama and you're talking about dead aim, taking dead aim. And you're firing what people refer to as a high-powered rifle, you know, a bolt-action high-powered rifle into a target. Am I the only one that noticed that, you know, we're kind of close to November the 22nd?
Oh, my gosh, I hadn't thought about that.
Isn't there, you know, does Joe Manchin have no shame whatsoever?
No, I don't think so. I mean, he's ignoring the wishes of you, the people in West Virginia. He can't even have time to listen to anything you have to say about the mountaintop removal, so no, I guess he doesn't. By the way, the 32nd miner is on the way up.
Isn't that amazing? You know, I've been following that story, and I know there are people watching it in the chat room as well.
I know. I was sitting up last night, and I thought, no, I can't do this. But anyhow,
it's so encouraging on the one hand, and it's so sad to realize that the Chileans could do for those 33 what because if we had anything in place that would make that possible for a coal miner in West Virginia. Don Blankenship would be screaming from what was left of the mountaintops that we're ruining coal mining with all these dern-fangled, blad-staggin' government regulations.
Well, the thing is that they've got people helping. They got NASA down there. They've got people from all over the world. And don't you think they could have done something for those coal miners in masses.
No, because they were dead. They were dead when the gas went off. I mean, it was instantaneous death.
Well, what about those that got? They just quit trying to even get their bodies up. The ones, where was that?
Grandel Canyon in Utah.
Yeah. Could they have helped them?
Not so much, because Grandel Canyon, you know, they sent a rescue team in, and then the rescuers got killed. Because the thing was so unstable.
That's right. I forgot about that.
To be fair, there's a big difference between mining for copper and mining for coal. Because coal by definition comes along with explosive gases.
The one thing that their president, you know, he's been there hugging all of them. And, of course, you know, they got on to Obama about hugging Rahm Emanuel. That wasn't dignified. I wonder who said that about him. But anyway, they, are you there?
All along.
You never know with these phones. He's closing down that mine. I guess it's owned by the government or something. But he's closing down the mine.
But the thing is, I also read an article over at Truthout earlier today. An article by John Pilger. And he said, he wrote, "The rescue of 33 miners in Chile is an extraordinary drama filled with pathos and heroism. It is also a media windfall for the Chilean government, whose every beneficence is recorded by a forest of cameras. One cannot fail to be impressed. However, like all great media events, it is a facade." And goes on to note, "The accident that trapped the miners is not unusual in Chile, and is the inevitable consequence of a ruthless economic system that has barely changed since the dictatorship of General Augusto Pinochet. Copper," he says, "copper is Chile's gold, and the frequency of mining disasters keeps pace with prices and profits."
I wondered about that.
He says, "There are, on average, 39 fatal accidents every year in Chile's privatized mines. The San Jose mine, where the trapped men work, became so unsafe in 2007 it had to be closed, but not for long. On 30th July last, a Labor Department report warned again of serious safety deficiencies, but the minister took no action, and 6 days later, the men were entombed."
And didn't get out.
Well, they're being gotten out now.
Well, these are the ones being gotten out.
But so often it's a matter of they die.
You wonder what the economy is down there, too, you know.
Sure.
I do say one thing, you know, I was kind of wondering about this, but before they came up, they asked to have something where they could be clean shaven and all and wash their hair and all that kind of stuff. So they're all kind of clean cut looking.
Well, among other things, I'm just being informed that this mine, of course, is a so-called independent mine. That means it's run purely for profit. It's non-union, and it is barely regulated, if at all.
Well, yeah.
And what was pointed out to me by David in Tennessee is that the regulated mines in Chile are some of the safest in the world because the regulations are so stringent. And this should be telling. Most of the gear that's been used to rescue those 33 men came from the very few regulated mines.
They didn't
have that stuff on site in this for-profit only mine.
Yeah.
It was only at the mines that were heavily regulated that this equipment was available.
Yeah, I heard that before they started rescuing that it was very dangerous, and it wasn't taken. You know, they didn't have any safety precautions, is what I heard. But
well, that's how it is when you run a non-union shop. Safety be damned.
Yeah, and I thought that guy that sent you that information, I thought that he said it right well. He's actually been a witness before Congress.
Right.
And I thought he said it really well, and it was kind of like Chris was lost for words, and, you know, it's unusual for him. I didn't watch him for a long time because he's driving me crazy, but then I started watching him again. If he's trying to drive me crazy again, I'll quit. But anyway. But anyway, well, I guess that's all. And how's Ferguson?
You know what? Today was his first day back at school.
Oh, today was the first day. I thought he was going back Monday.
No, today was his first day back, and he went to school a little bit late so he wouldn't have to deal with the crush in the hallways and the bus and everything. But he got through. He got through and feeling pretty decent, and he starts physical therapy soon.
Okay. And how about Agnes?
You know, I guess she's back to normal. I mean, I'm not trying to be flip when I say I guess, but she was not going to slow down and doesn't appear to be slowing down, so I guess she's just going to continue to slave drive herself. Let's let it be known that I don't do that.
Was she born in the South?
Yeah.
Well, what can I say? Southern woman.
There you go.
Work yourself to death.
Yeah, doesn't know how to quit.
Yeah, before I go, I wanted to say something about the cat. I heard John Fox tell a story about this cat named Ugly.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe about a year ago or maybe longer. I would love for him to tell that again. That is such a sweet story.
Okay.
If, I don't know if he's listening or not, but I sure would like to hear that again. Or he could call it in or whatever. There's such a touching story about, I don't know, you know, I thought about sometime about these animals. I don't know. I wonder if they're not, you know, God's testing us to see how we treat the angels or whatever. You know, they're special. They're not like us. We're rotten to the core in a lot of ways. But anyway, the animals are pure. They may be I've got two now that like to fight each other, two little brothers.
Well, that's what brothers are there for.
But the thing is, they want to scratch their eyes, you know. But they just said the 32nd miner is out.
Wow.
Wow, isn't that wonderful?
And you know, David noting the minute the 33rd man is out, the owners of the San Jose mine will file for bankruptcy and seal the hole to avoid any judgments or having to pay for the rescue.
Oh, boy. I hope some way they can be, you know, get some money out of it. I really hope so. But probably not from the company.
No,
probably. A lot of them say they're not going back to mining.
Well, you couldn't hardly blame them, could you?
No, and then some of them that might be thinking about it, I don't think their family wants them to either.
No, not at all.
Well, anyway, Bob, I'll let you go
Well, tell him little fellers to quit fighting amongst themselves. I'm sure you can break them up one day.
Well, they have got so much energy. They're about 3 months old and.
Oh, dear.
There was five of them, and then two of them passed, and I got three left. They almost look just alike, and they're so much fun. They're the ones that turned you on, turned your show
on. Okay.
Now, I've just got the one in here now. He likes to be up on my, what you call this thing you look at?
Monitor?
Yeah, my monitor. And it's real thin, you know, it's a thin monitor, and. But he loves it up there.
Oh, it's warm.
Oh, I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah, there's heat coming up from the back, and, you know, cats love a good belly warmer.
Okay. Okay.
All right, Juanita, you have a wonderful evening, dear.
You too.
Bye now. It's Juanita calling from Central Florida. In many ways, Juanita is the conscience of the horn. And onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, and in many ways, this caller from New Hampshire is kind of the barely conscious members of the horn community.
Hey, Brian, how are you?
New Hampshire here. Despite my schizophrenia and manic depression, I'm still hanging in there. And that gets me to I'm writing up a piece here. Well, I'll get to that maybe later this week, or maybe it doesn't look good for the November elections there. I'm really crestfallen about letting these bastards take over again, the Republicans, how the American people can be so willfully ignorant. And, you know, your previous caller there, a couple of callers back there, Dave from Maine, he's so right about this. We can't keep being euphemistic about them, just dismissing Tea Partiers and right-wingers and libertarians and these extremist fascists that have been in power in this country since at least January 20th, 1981. We can't keep dismissing them as just a bunch of nuts. They've been controlling the country for going on 30 years. It's going to be more than 30 years once January 2011 comes around if we can't stop the you know, some polls are looking good for Paul Hodes up in New Hampshire, and that guy Coons you just talked about, that debate, that I think she's going to get blown up. She doesn't have much of a chance, but it looks like CNN, the corporatist, rightist news media, CNN too, they're fascists too, as far as I'm concerned. I haven't had cable TV since 2000, take it or leave it. But I believe they're trying to pump up her numbers because she's so cute. Even with her Chrissy O'Donnell, Marty Feldman-esque guys, you know, she's just so darn Palin-esque as well. She's just so vivacious.
Well, you know, I've been watching my Twitter feed, Brian, and
nothing going on between her ears, Bob. Nothing going on in the muscles between her ears, but there's not a policy there, whatever. Chris Coons has so much he could do for the people of Delaware and this nation. He'd be such a great heir apparent to Joe Biden. It's disgusting. But what were you going to say? I'm sorry.
No, I was merely going to point out that I was watching the Twitter feed, and I've seen people, you know, when you're trying to type on the fly, you know, typing Christine O'Donnell says every time, they just took her initials, and now she's simply referred to as COD. COD says.
A cod. Oh, I think a cod has a more intelligent face. If you really look up close. I'm from New England. I've gone fishing with my uncles, and my father was more of a landlubber, but he would go take us out there when we were kids. A cod is a much more intelligent looking fish or being of any kind. There's much more going on between the cod's ears than between Miss O'Donnell's ears. There's much more. We could elect a dead cod or a cod piece from the Shakespearean era. If we could find in the Globe Theater in downtown London or some historic piece, will be much more effective of a leadership. You know, we are George W. Bush proved that on May 1st, 2003 with his cod piece on the deck of the Abraham Lincoln.
Oh, how quickly we forget. Yes.
All the major fighting was over. It just was his cod piece was the real star, I guess, with all the female commentators. but I'm sorry.
No. I'm looking back in anguish. Him with his little flight suit on, Roger Ramjet Jr. pilot codpiece, you know, all of that.
This is a guy who deserted the military at his time of the Alabama, the Texas, and the supposedly the Alabama Air National Guard. He deserts the military in time of war. He doesn't have to, from then on, he never reports back to any military installation anywhere until he becomes president, probably not until then. And he gets to go to Harvard Medical School, and most of us average working class stiffs, we'd be threatened at least, and we'd be in the break from the first time they nabbed us and brought us back from AWOL or unauthorized absence, and then after 30 days it becomes desertion, whether it's reservist or not, especially in a time of war, it becomes even more of a...
Yeah, it gets a little more grave, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does get a little more grave. And talk about grave, thank God, yeah, that's the good word to you. I agree with Juanita. Thank God those 33 men are back up. They're just about all back up there. Thank God for that. But also, you talk about they have the video interviews of them. Can you imagine American mines? I don't know, you know much more about mining than I do, Bob, but whether it's coal mines or copper mines or any kind of mining, can you imagine them allowing such safety equipment where these men have been allowed to survive for months and months, and where they've been interviewed about what their future plans are? And they say, you know, after this, the natural response is, well, I don't want to go into any more mining after this hell is over. It's still hell being trapped under the earth like that, I'm sure, for this many months. But the fact is that they are alive, and that's what I said that in an email to you, I think it was about 10 days ago, that even under that fascist Pinochet, the government of Chile, with its corporatist and free market craziness, even there they seem to have more concern for their workers, for their miners at least, you know, and I didn't even know what kind of a mine it was, so I'm not going, you know more about the coal mine, so you're probably making very prescient points there about that, but they still have held up to the workers' rights have been kept as a edict and a law, especially now since he left in 1790 Pinochet, and that they finally captured them in England or something, and they brought them to The Hague or whatever. Yeah, he was a very elderly man then. But and the fact is, they do take these laws for corporations seriously. Like Mike Malloy brought it up two nights ago, the Hungarian, that red sludge overflow in the Danube River, the great historic Danube River there outside of Budapest in that area, the two cities, Buda and Pest, of course, that sludge. They have arrested the leaders of the corporation that caused the spill with their negligence.
They could do 20 years hard time.
My God, well, that's those great Magyars have got some national pride after all. They got some, you know, you could show that these are people that they did finally conquer, and they were made tributary to Genghis Khan and all that too, the Magyars, but they got their Irish up from time to time. It's like the Serbs under the Ottoman Empire. They never really were conquered. You know, they were the Greeks too. They were proud, strong people. You had to pay them off mostly to make them part of that empire, whether it's the Mongols or the Ottoman Roman Empire. You know, that's part of being an empire too, the corruption of it. But
the Romans. The Romans had trouble with them. What were they? They were the Scordisci, maybe, or. Because the Romans periodically forayed up the Danube and had their own. It's exactly as you describe it. Hey, Brian, I do have to roll along, though. I've got to roll, though, because I want to make sure I hit everybody before get to everybody before the night's out. I'm glad that Cobb resonated with you, because, you know, Cobb bless you.
It did, and I think I could have got a better rise in the poll ratings if I had put the Cod on there opposite Mr. Coons there, and I think that would have turned in just by not answering and just blubbering. It would have had more content to it in terms of the Mother Earth and the national, you know, the natural world, that kind of thing, instead of and something more thoughtful. These are opportunists, these right wingers there. Miss O'Donnell is one of them, Bob, and Mr. Coons is so well qualified compared to her that it is night and day. I'll let you go, though, sir. Have a good night.
All right, you have a good night, Brian. Bye now.
Okay, bye-bye. Bye-bye.
And one thing before I do go on to the next caller, please don't hang up. A note that I got earlier, a couple of things, this thing in particular. John dropped me a note, and he said, not John Fox, another one of our many John guys. We've got lots of Davids and lots of Johns. John said, it's happened again, talking about the miners in Chile. I woke up this morning, this is prayer meeting Wednesday after all. It's happened again. I woke up this morning to see the news of the rescued miners in Chile in my local paper with the headline, Miner Miracle. Har, har, har. Miner, M-I-N-E-R. It's a pun. A quick search shows this was used in lots of papers and blog posts. Of course, I'm glad to see the guys are safe, but a miracle this ain't. The men made it because they were well-trained miners. They were working in a hole that was required to have air vents and a safety room stocked with survival gear. They survived despite the best efforts of the mining company, which has a much worse safety record than the state mining concerns. They survived because the union and the government took over the rescue rather than leaving it to their fly-by-night employer. We saw the same stupid headlines after the Kew Creek rescue. In that case, you could almost excuse it, as those miners had all the odds stacked against them. Non-union, they worked for a tiny mining outfit with outdated maps that practiced dangerous room and pillar mining. So I suppose you could say Goddess might have been looking out for them. But in this case, things worked like they should eventually. Hence, no miracle. You know, I'm all for saying, well, you know, it was a miraculous field goal or, you know, whatever. But can we please give credit to human determination when human determination is what changes the outcome? You know, that wasn't a miracle on the Hudson when Captain Sullenberger saved the lives of his entire passenger manifest and his crew. That was training. It was hard work. It was dedication. And it was a lifetime spent learning how to deal with that moment. Just saying. Thanks, John. I'm glad you pointed that out. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Preston.
Hey, Preston.
The pilot's name was Sullenberger, or what was his name?
Yeah, Sullenberger.
Sullenberger. And he was the head of the union, I believe. or some union that trains other pilots in safety or something like that.
Right.
And, yeah, great point. I agree. What else? It's been a little while. I appreciated Brian bringing up Pinochet in Chile. I just last night on Link Television, they have this program called Future Express, where this guy travels around the world and he just hops on trains of different countries. And last night he was in Chile and spoke with different passengers from different wealth backgrounds, different experiences for sure. And a lot of people, either they lived through the dictatorship or they had parents who lived through the dictatorship, and just what a nightmare it was. But how the songs of Victor Jara continue, and a lot of the socialist agenda of Allende continues on in their hearts and in some of their policies too. It was amazing to see who their last president was. Bachelet, I think?
Yes.
The woman who first was divorced, which is very taboo, an atheist, which in a very Catholic country, again, is very taboo, a socialist, and her father had been tortured to death by Pinochet, and she had been abducted and beaten up herself, but carried on with human determination, what you were saying, and a bit of a miracle too. I don't think it's either or. Maybe it can be a mix. But
okay, I'll go that far.
Okay, but anyway, what else? Anyway, if anyone out there can stream Link TV, and the program is called Future Express. It's fascinating. I've seen other episodes where they're traveling the train, and he was going through Asia for a while, and Vietnam, and so on and so forth. You know, another bit of history that in some ways, you know, the past didn't go anywhere. You know, our bombs that we dropped during the Vietnam War are still blowing up and killing people there to this day. You know, we left thousands and thousands of tons of unexploded ordnance there. And every week, either a farmer's plow will hit some old buried bomb, or some kid will pick up one. And, God, we owe that country reparations. Not these sweatshop slave jobs are turning areas into big, you know, brothels and stuff like that. Reparations would be nice. And, you know, some capitalists can make a lot of money building equipment to demine Vietnam.
Sure.
And Cambodia and Laos. You know, it's in some ways it's like negotiating with, I don't know, can you negotiate with the mob? I don't know. And ask them to try to make money. You know, you can have all the money and the diamonds and the fancy cars and all this, that.
Just make the mines go away.
Please. Amen. Exactly. God.
And Horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner just added his thoughts. He said, yeah, the thing is, it's not thank God, it's thank science.
Yeah.
And you know, that's one of those... I've been following this Twitter feed on COD, Christine O'Donnell. And of course, she tried to dance dance around everything. You know, do you believe in evolution? Well, and of course the usual dance. And she got handed one a few minutes ago. She was asked what recent Supreme Court decision she disagreed with, and she said, "There are so many. Give me one, and I'll tell you."
I don't think she's been keeping track.
No. Well, how about Citizens United?
Right, right.
Of course, in light of the fact that she's the beneficiary of a lot of Citizens United advertising money, it would be kind of hard for her to say she opposed that.
Yeah, it's a huge amount of money. It's kind of overwhelming. But I wonder, sometimes I try to take their perspective, the money, the concentrated money people, and what do they see as kind of a threat to their ideology? And, you know, what are progressive people doing to build their own media and do their own messaging? It's been,
well, that question remains, because it's still out there. You know, we've seen these numbers that Democrats are being outspent by conservatives, Republicans, baggers, whatever, 7-1.
Yeah.
We've seen that. And But you know, I saw where the great bete noir of the right, George Soros, Preston, said, "Hey, I'm sitting this one out."
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, you know, the Koch brothers. It looks like Koch, but it's K-O-C-H.
I'm constantly confused by it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's Koch. But anyway, whatever it is, it's a ton of money. They made another $5 billion last year. So
So a couple of million dollars for to corrupt a political process, that's chump change.
It is. Nevertheless, with a lot less money, but again, that human determination. This feels a little bit different than, say, when Newt Gingrich, when they had their big midterm voting success and, you know, Contract on America stuff going on. There's more of a response. We had nothing like the progressive talk radio back then that we have now. What else? We've got The Daily Show and Colbert doing their thing.
Yeah, but you know what? Lately, Preston, I've got a little bit of a problem with Jon Stewart.
Likewise. Yeah, I definitely have criticisms of both of them, for sure.
For one, I'm not so sure that this, you know, rally for sanity is the best thing in the world, because if people really do come from all over the United States to go to the rally for sanity, especially if they're riding buses, are they going to get home in time to vote?
Well, it's the 4th? The
2nd.
The 2nd.
And this thing's on the 30th? That's one. Yeah. And the second is the false equivalence that underlies it. This idea that there's somebody out there in the progressive broadcast universe, small and compacted though it is, that is the ideological counterbalance to Glenn Beck, is. It's a false equivalence. Because that person doesn't exist. There's nobody out there on the left making up phony baloney history. You know what I mean? Nice. Glenn Beck makes up history.
Yeah, that's true. And I think, I don't know, I think Stewart does some good work to correct the record here and there. And Colbert, you know, just the satire, the strength of the satire, I think, is an important contribution. And, you know, they both have some interesting, you know, they have right-wingers on, but they also, and they tear up some of the right-wingers. Remember that stock floor guy, the stock trader, does the TV show?
Oh, yeah. The one who started the teabagging movement?
It may have been that guy. Kramer?
Oh, no. Jim Cramer. Okay, different stock guy.
Okay. But, and other thinkers, some very interesting, you know, progressive people too. I don't know. It's a mix. I don't catch it all the time. But you know, I think a lot of people are gonna. I think the Rally for Sanity has some good aspects to it as well. I'll say that much. And who knows? I'm sure there will be other groups there, other interest groups who will utilize just that gathering. You know, human rights groups may be there. Some environmental people, signing people up, Greenpeace. I don't know. Maybe a Appalachia Rising contingent can.
You know what? That would be a great idea.
I think it would be fun. In fact, that reminds me, just this morning on the community radio station here, KGNU, it's in Boulder and Denver, they spoke with somebody from, it was called Appalachia. I made a note here. Certainly a solidarity group with you. I don't think they were from West Virginia. I think this guy was from North Carolina. And another person from maybe Kentucky. Where is that? I don't know, but you have appreciated hearing their voices. It was really good. And
I think we're making more and more noise, and I don't think the noise is going to go away. Because frankly, we've tried everything else. We've gone, you know, I mean, I've been part of it. We've gone year after year after year. To walk, and we have walked ourselves foot sore, Preston, through the halls of Congress.
Yeah.
And we got 171 co-sponsors for a very simple bill. And even with 170, 171, maybe 175 co-sponsors, we can't get a single committee hearing. Not one. And it's because of my congressman, Nick Rahal, who comes back here and brags, to his owners in the mining industry that he stopped it.
Yeah, and it's because...
And he stopped it because he's been in Congress for 34 years, and he's a Democrat. And there's a lot of people who, when he says don't do it, don't do it. Or because when you've been, when you get 34 years of tenure, you can make a lot of stuff go sideways for somebody who crosses you.
Yep, that's right. That's right. You know, just today I was reading a Earth Island Journal, and they had an article about how Europe is ending their subsidies for a lot of coal mines, and some of them are going to completely stop in about 3 years, and then they're going to have a bunch of other money for both helping workers transition, find other jobs, other trades, and a lot of them will be going into what they're developing, which is their renewable sector. It's absolutely huge, and it's going to grow by hundreds of billions of dollars in the next, in the coming years. See, that's where I think there is hope to kind of, you know, dialogue with the mob and say, look, buku dollars are headed this way. You know, get Tony Soprano on the couch and say, look, there's a lot of money there.
Oh, and speaking of Tony Soprano, he was mentioned earlier in the program as well, but it was the new Alan Grayson ad is magnificent.
Oh, good.
It's a parody of the opening of The Sopranos. That features that that right wing Christian Reconstructionist Dominionist freak who's running against him, and I highly recommend that you go and have a look, and others do as well. Preston, I've got to roll on, but it's awfully good to hear from you. Don't be such a stranger, okay?
Likewise, I'll be in touch soon.
All right, take care.
And good night. Bye bye.
Bye now. Horn resident optimist, that is Preston calling from Denver, and just a. A quick reminder, because he brought it up. You know, the Horn exists as an attempt to create our own progressive media. You can't get much grassrootsier than what the Horn is, or considering the fact that there are a lot of efforts that go into it, that what the Horn are. And it's for that reason that I mentioned that, you know, we find ourselves on the 13th of October in rather dire straits. Just because the contributions aren't rolling in. So if you're sitting back there thinking, well, you know, I'll let somebody else send in $10. If you've got it to send, please, please. I mean, we've got bills to pay, and they don't all come due at the beginning of the month or the end of the month. Some of them come due in the middle of the month. We can't pay them right now. And it impacts our ability to get the program out. So just remember, please, that button over at headonradionetwork.com, the one that says PayPal. Or you can use the snail mail address. Either way would be fine. I mentioned this at the beginning of the program in the intro to the prayer meeting. I got one email saying there's $10 on the way. One. And I appreciate everything you all do to keep all of this going. But we really need all of you. The whole point to a grassroots effort is that it involves all of us. So if it is at all humanly possible, and it does not do you harm, if you can afford to contribute and help, it will be sincerely appreciated and make it possible for us to do the things that we need to do. It's time to get out of here. The Rick Smith Show is on the way, live from behind the Scrapple Curtain in Pennsylvania. And I'm sure there's a great, great program in the offing. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this go. Lottie in the chat room, our News Ninjas, Gene and Susan, our blogger, Texas Betsy, Matt Osborne with the great post today over at Crooks and Liars, our op-ed columnist, Reverbo, Cavalcade of Crazy, my head writer, David in Tennessee, John Fox, our chief engineer, Ben Birch, who makes everything happen via WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you all. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColRiverWind.org, also AppalachiaRising.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.